Oh, you've given me a number and you've taken off my name. To get around this campus, why, I almost need a plane. And you're supporting Chiang Kai-shek while I'm supporting Mao. So when I've got something to say, sir, I'm gonna say it now. I wish that you'd make up your mind, I wish that you'd decide that I should live as freely as those who live outside. Cause we also are entitled to the rights to be endowed. And when I've got something to say, sir, I'm gonna say it now. Who you'd like to be?
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Michael Stinson in Hawaii. Halliburton has a multi-billion dollar contract to feed and house U.S. troops in Iraq, but there are problems. A food contractor that runs 10% of the dining facilities in Iraq claims that it hasn't been paid by Halliburton for months and is threatening to stop serving hot meals. The company, Event Source, serves 100,000 meals a day in Iraq under a contract with a Halliburton subsidiary. Event Source claims Halliburton owes it $87 million, including payment for George W. Bush's plastic Thanksgiving dinner with the troops. When you get stuck out there for $87 million, explains Event Source Chief Executive Officer Phil Morrell, it's a question of economics. An international group that usually monitors elections in developing democracies said Monday it would take a post at Florida precincts in November in hopes of averting another debacle when voters pick the next U.S. president. 4 years after Florida became the object of international ridicule, officials for the Catholic group Pax Christi USA will place monitors from 30 countries at polls in four Florida counties that were at the center of the 2000 U.S. presidential election dispute. The Washington-based group will ask its international organization to send monitors to Miami-Dade, Broward, Palm Beach, and Duval counties, where voting irregularities kept the outcome of the 2000 presidential race in doubt for more than a month. George W. Bush got no bounce from his first foray last week onto the campaign trail against Democrat John Kerry, a new USA Today CNN Gallup poll shows. Despite a series of speeches in which he attacked the Massachusetts senator's record and warned that the country would not be safe under his leadership, the poll shows that if the election were today, Kerry would beat Bush by 8 percentage points, 52-44% among likely voters. Of those polled, 45% said they are certain to vote for Kerry and 38% for Bush. That means the campaign is focused on the 17% of voters who say they are undecided or could change their minds. Another sign of trouble for Bush, men, usually a Republican strength, split 47% for Kerry, 46% for Bush. More after this.
Make a fast friend. Adopt an ex-racing greyhound. Greyhound Pets of America is a national nonprofit organization that finds loving homes for these friendly, loving ex-racers. Greyhounds make fantastic pets because they thrive on attention, generally get along great with children and other animals, and are usually pretty easy to housebreak. Call Greyhound Pets of America at 800-366-1472. Greyhound Pets of America, 800-366-1472.
With the U.S. presidential election campaign underway, late-night comedy television show hosts are taking a humorous look at the candidates. Jay Leno said after all the voting, Bush called John Kerry to congratulate him. I'm not sure what they talked about. I think we can rule out swapping war stories. David Letterman quipped, have you seen any of the new Bush television commercials? In one of the commercials, you see Bush for 30 seconds. In another commercial, you get to see Bush for 60 seconds, kind of like his stint in the National Guard. For Minuteman News Service, this is Michael Stinson in Hawaii.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
I have excellent news, Americans. The Bushites have come up with a surefire plan to increase the number of manufacturing jobs in the USA. Yes, while Democrats merely complain about the demise of such jobs, George W. and his team are stepping forward with a creative can-do solution that I think can only be described as astonishing. Their plan is proposed in the Economic Report of the President. In it, George W.'s top economists assert that all of those people working in such fast food joints as McDonald's and Subway really are not part of the service economy, but more accurately, should be reclassified as manufacturing workers, just as those who make cars and other industrial products. After all, contend Bush's crack team of job classifiers, when you insert that meat patty, lettuce and cheese and ketchup into a sliced bun, you are engaged in the combining of inputs to manufacture a product. No less so than those who assemble electronic parts to manufacture, say, a computer. Bush's innovative economists also note that manufacturing is officially defined as the mechanical, physical, or chemical transformation of materials into new products. And they claim, when you heat ground beef, you are, in fact, chemically transforming it into a burger. Of course, if Bush can redefine hundreds of thousands of hamburger flippers as manufacturing workers, then he can statistically hush the critics who've been pointing to the drastic decline in these production jobs. There's another upside for the Bushites, too. Since manufacturing gets special tax breaks, suddenly Bush's backers in the fast food industry serendipitously qualify. This is Jim Hightower saying, I'm with Bush on this one. After all, by assembling nouns, verbs, and whatnot, I've manufactured this piece. And by applying the chemistry of my tiny brain cells, I've transformed raw words into a new product. Manufacturers of the world, unite! Now where do I go to get my tax break?
I'll just see who that is then.
Oh no! South American killer bees! They're going for my
A swarm of killer bees. That's one thing you don't want in your house. One thing you do want in your house is a better-looking roof with Blightanium plywood from Georgia-Pacific. Other roof sheathing materials can swell at the edges, creating an unsightly checkerboard pattern under your shingles. Blightanium roofs provide a more uniform surface. Blightanium plywood. Build it better.
When you hear how big businesses get all the best technology for the best price, does it make you crazy? To calm down, here's a thought from the voice of reason. Get a Xerox M15i. It's not just a digital copier printer that gives you 16 quality pages a minute. It also scans and faxes in color. All that and more for a $66 a month lease. Big business or small, what could be more reasonable?
Call 1-800-ASK-XEROX for business lease details. Toner and photoreceptor sold separately.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. From coast to coast, this is Tom Hartman with you. Boy, it's the Bush campaign is a full tilt boogie. Have you noticed the? I'm going to put on my partisan hat here for a moment, even though I'm really not. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Green. I think of myself as a Democrat, small D. A believer in democracy, but I can't help but get involved in this election, in this campaign. I mean, it's just the assault on democracy by this administration, and there have been assaults on democracy by Democratic administrations as well throughout history, but the one by this one is just breathtaking. But anyhow, putting on my partisan hat for a moment, then we'll get to our larger question for the hour, which is how much longer are we going to allow conservative voodoo economic policies to devastate America's middle class, and what's the mechanism for that? I get some just fascinating factoids for you, and I think interesting insights. But anyhow, flip-flops have become the topic of the day, right? I mean, Bush is running around talking about flip-flops, and I think flip-flops are fairly legitimate issue. It's flip-flop serious stuff. Bush is against campaign finance reform. Then he's for it. Bush is against a Homeland Security Department. Remember that? No, we don't need to say. Then he's for it. He's against a 9/11 commission. Then he's for it. Well, and now he's against testifying in front of it. He's against an Iraqi weapons of mass destruction investigation. You know, the failure of the intelligence. This is the one that John McCain yesterday was saying, why won't he allow the commission to have subpoena powers? After all, more than 500 Americans have died in Iraq based on faulty intelligence. Shouldn't we have the ability to subpoena the spies and say, what did, well, no, he says. Bush is against nation building, then he's for it. He's against deficits, and then he's for them. He's for free trade, then he's for tariffs on steel, then he's against them. He's against the U.S. taking a role in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, then he pushes hard for a roadmap and a Palestinian state, and then he tells Abbas that God told him to strike at Al-Qaeda and that Abbas better get this thing together or he's going to be busy with the campaign and he won't be able to pay attention to the Israeli conflict. Remember that? That was startling. He is for states' right to decide on gay marriage. Then he is for changing the Constitution. First he says he'll provide money for first responders. Then he doesn't. First he says help is on the way to the military. Then he cuts benefits to our soldiers and our veterans. At one point, Bush said, the most important thing is for us to find Osama bin Laden. And then in a news conference about a year ago, a little more recently, you know, during the let's focus on Iraq instead, he said, and I quote, I don't know where he is, I have no idea, and I really don't care, end quote. Bush claims to be in favor of the environment and then secretly starts drilling on Padre Island. He talks about helping education and increases mandates while cutting funding. He says, first, the U.S. won't negotiate with North Korea. Oh, then we will. Then we won't. Then we will. Now maybe. He goes to Bob Jones University. Then he says, well, I shouldn't have done that. He says he would demand a U.N. Security Council vote on whether to sanction military action against Iraq. Later, he announced he would not call for a vote. Bush said the mission accomplished banner was put up by the sailors. Those nasty sailors. Later, he admitted it was his advance team. He's for fingerprinting and photographing Mexicans who enter the U.S. Now he's against it. And this is the beginning of the list. It's a list that was sent to me via email. I'm not sure who came up with this, but it's a pretty reasonable summary. It's a, you know, a beginning point, as it were. But let's move along. I don't want to make this show, frankly, about partisan politics. I think that there are much larger issues, and frankly, much more important for the survival and future of American democracy. For example, conservative voodoo economic policy. We're going to have somebody on tomorrow from the Heritage Foundation to explain to us voodoo economics. Should be interesting. Small business, this from Yahoo News. I'm not sure where this was first. USA Today, Jim Hopkins. Small business, the engine of U.S. job recovery, are retreating on hiring plans, magnifying the jobless recovery, USA Today reports. The share of small businesses planning to hire fell to 13% last month. That's down from 17% in January, according to the National Federation of Independent Business National Federation of Independent Businesses. The trend is significant, the USA Today says, because small businesses create most jobs. I bet you didn't know that. If you've been listening to right-wing talk radio, where they say, "Well, yes, I remember how astonished I was. I was driving down the street." And I was listening to a right-wing talk show host who shall remain unnamed, who was, I mean, maybe he said it because he was high on OxyContin at the time, but in any case, he says, it was during the big debate about tax debates, and he goes, so-called tax cuts, this let's borrow money from our grandchildren and give it to people and call it a tax cut. And he says, well, of course the rich should get most of the tax breaks if you want to create jobs. I've never known of a poor person who created a job. And I was just astonished, because the vast majority of entrepreneurs that I've known in my life, and I've known a lot of them, and you know, one of my closest friends for many years was a fellow by the name of Wilson Harrell, who founded Inc. magazine. He wrote two chapters in his autobiography, For Entrepreneurs Only, about me and the work that I've done. And he wrote the foreword, or the afterword, rather, to a book that I wrote called ADHD Secrets of Success. Wilson identified himself as one of those ADD hunters, right? He says, all entrepreneurs have ADD. In order to be a successful entrepreneur, you have to have ADD. Anyhow, Wilson Harrell who published Inc. magazine for 30, 40 years. Wilson just died the year before last of cancer in his 70s. Wilson used to rhapsodize about how, yeah, I mean, they had the Inc. 500. And you know, we would do these gigs together. Wilson and I would, you know, speak before small business groups. This was back in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s. And it was always people, basically middle class folks. I mean, somebody who you know, was starting a business with what was left over from their paycheck in their bedroom or on their kitchen table. Or even, I mean, I've heard so many stories of people who started a business with their unemployment checks. They lost their job, they got an unemployment, you know, they got an unemployment, they took a little bit of that money and they started a business with it. And go out and talk to people who own small businesses in America, businesses that employ fewer than 50 people. And I'm telling you, you will discover that, you know, some of them may be very well off now. They might be doing well as a result of the business they're run, although more and more of them are hurting because all these corporate welfare and tax breaks are going to the big corporations, the Halliburton-sized corporations, the corporations that are the size of Bush and his friends. But the vast majority of them started out as just average middle-class folks who decided to take a chance. And here's the statistic. The United States of America's 5.8 million small employers employ half of all American workers. Half of everybody who works in America works in a small business. And these are the companies that are not started by the rich folks. I'm telling you, it's true. And you know it. I mean, this isn't rocket science. And now here's an interesting math. If the small businesses employ half of America's workers, and government employs roughly a third of all American workers, federal, state, local, county, you know, cops, firefighters, teachers, road crews, government bureaucrats, of course, all the different agencies and whatnot. Directly and indirectly, there's an indirect hiring. For example, governments give block grants to nonprofits to do things like administer Head Start and programs like that. And so, you know, if you consider those people government employees, they're basically, their paychecks are coming from the government. A third of all Americans work for the government. And a half of all Americans work for small business. Now, what does that leave? It's like less than a sixth or something like that. I mean, I can't do fractions in my head that fast, but it's like a very small portion of our workforce is actually employed by very large companies. And again, think back to all the people you know. How many of the, you know, it's... So anyhow, the small businesses now are only 13% are planning to hire. Why? One of the main reasons is rising overhead. According to USA Today, rising employee health insurance costs are sapping companies. Near Grand Rapids, Michigan, for example, this is the article in USA Today, Sly Furniture health costs rose more than 10% this year. There's a company, Sly Furniture. After a single double-digit jump last year, Sly makes tables and other wood furniture. Like many Midwest factories, it has slashed employment from 400 in 1999 to 150 right now. 1999 was the last year it added employees. And so, you know, you have small businesses as the engine of business creation in America. Warren Buffett, see, this gets to the core of what it's all about. Somebody called yesterday and said, you know, well, I'm really concerned about, you know, the fact that I'm paying 40% taxes and so much of it is going to welfare. And I said, I am too, and I didn't have the numbers in front of me. I do now. Here they are. The amount spent on all low-income programs, federal dollars, all low-income programs in the United States last year was $51.7 billion. $51.7 billion. That's your school lunch program, your poverty programs, your emergency fuel assistance programs, the cost of taking care of the medical needs of people who show up in emergency rooms and hospitals, all of that stuff, $51.7 billion. That's your welfare budget, okay? Welfare to corporations. This from the Center on Budget Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, a report that they came up with called Aid for Dependent Corporations. Welfare to corporations last year, $167 billion. $167 billion welfare to corporations, $51 billion welfare to all people. Together, they're about what we're spending in Iraq. It's amazing. 20 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned. This is Tom Hartman.
People in Africa who live near great apes might find that their own prosperity is tied to that of their neighborhood primates. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. International research groups have been working hard to protect the great apes of Africa, but their efforts have had limited success. Almost all populations of these primates are declining. A UN conservation expert says solving problems for the animals means dealing with the poverty of people who live nearby. Some researchers say 90% of the habitat for great apes will be degraded in some way within the next 25 years. In Africa, the landscape is being torn up by roads that are built for mining and logging operations, and illegal poaching of apes adds to the problem. Ian Redmond is a tropical field biologist and conservationist, and he's worked at the Karasoki Research Center in Rwanda. He says habitats for great apes are in some of the poorest parts of the world. He says poverty often forces people to work for the mining and logging companies or to poach to feed their families. He says people need alternatives to ensure their own well-being and that of the neighboring wildlife.
And you can't help someone lift themselves out of poverty by encouraging them to destroy their environment because their kids weren't thankers. You know, maybe the parents will get a job for a few years that depends on destroying the environment, but if it's not sustainable, then the long-term result will be a negative one.
Redmond says successful projects like the Rwanda Research Center are designed to reduce poverty. He says the Karasoki Project has employed many local residents for their entire adult lives. Money from guerrilla tourism and other conservation efforts is returned to the community to build clinics, schools, and water systems. Redmond says that's made the project part of the local culture, and it offers a daily reminder of the benefits that can follow these kinds of conservation projects. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylor Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
In my country, a group of religious extremists are reshaping the government to promote their own agenda and morality.
The government can keep a list of everyone I call, and they do not need a judge's permission.
Our citizens are seized and held in prison without being charged of a crime, without the right to a trial, and without a lawyer. Why should you care about what is happening to my country? Because my country is the United States of America.
If elected, I'll lie about weapons of mass destruction as a pretext to invade another country.
I'll call myself an environmentalist and gut clean air standards.
Our allies will go from respecting us to hating us, and I don't care.
I'll leave no child behind, unless they can't afford it.
I promise to keep you in a state of fear and anxiety, so you never question what we're doing.
And if you do, we'll call you unpatriotic.
Furthermore.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he that... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh?
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the...
We'll be right back.
the best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And this storm is coming big, boy. It's the economic, conservative voodoo economic policies are fixing to devastate America's middle class. So this is, I'm telling you, this is going to be a huge problem for the next administration, whether it's George Bush or whether it's John Kerry as president. Whoever's going to be president is going to have a terrible problem. Anyhow, back to just to wrap up this welfare spending thing. Total federal spending on a safety net for the poor costs the average taxpayer about $400 a year, while spending on corporate welfare programs costs the same taxpayer about $1,400 a year. And in this last Congress, over 90% of the budget cuts passed by the last Congress, the last year, over 90% of the budget cuts cut spending for the poor. Not for corporate welfare. Programs that ensure food for the needy, housing for the homeless, job training for the unemployed, community health care for the sick. And only a total of 3.9% of federal outlays go to programs that solely benefit poor people. 3.9% of our budget. So, you know, the next time you hear some conservative ranting about, oh, you know, they got to cut back on all this social spending. Well, number one, they're doing it. Number two, it's only 3.9% of the federal budget. And number three, it's a total of $51.7 billion a year. Now, we spent, in the last 18 months, we've spent more than $140 billion just in Iraq. It was $80 billion at the beginning, and then Bush came back and asked for another $87 billion. It's $167 billion total. That's three times all the money that we spend on welfare programs in the United States. More than three times, almost four times. So, statistics to know. Anyhow, 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number if you'd like to be on the program. 1-866-889-8894. And Chris in northern New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chris, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. You know, you keep bringing up the Dickensian model that the neocons are pushing us toward, you know. I'm reworking my way through Little Dorrit, and I don't think I'm going to make it this time. I really don't.
Oh, Dickens' novel?
Yeah.
It's one I have not read.
It's a rough one. Since you're the only historian in this conversation, I wanted to ask you a question. Can you give me an example anywhere in our country's history where there was a, quote, jobless recovery, end quote, because I can't find one? You know, I think it's like saying you drive a sports car dump truck. There ain't no such animal.
Yeah.
You know, the closest you can come, looking in history, is what Reagan did, which is just what Bush is doing, you know, borrowing tons of money, socking it all into the defense industry and the energy industries and waiting for the stock market to bump. But that is really short-lived and untenably top-heavy and bottom-heavy with deficits.
Well, and it's, you know, and it's driving the engine with government spending. I mean, those 21,000 jobs that were created last month,
right,
they were all government jobs, and they were all the result of increased defense spending.
Yeah, but there's no such thing as a jobless recovery. I mean, is there in history?
Well,
I can't think of one.
The only there's two variables. And it's a really good question. There's two variables. One, if you go back, you know, I don't know who the publisher is, but there's a collection of New York Times front pages that go back to the 19th century. It's a coffee table book, and you can see it, in any of the bookstores. It's been around for years, and it's fascinating to read because you read the front pages of the New York Times through the 1929, 1930, 31, the years of the Hoover administration, the conservative Republican Hoover administration.
Right.
And throughout that time, Herbert Hoover was trying to tell the American people that the economy was recovering. It's coming back. Don't worry, folks. Yes, there's no jobs. It's going to get better. And so, yes, we've had a jobless recovery before, and it was on Herbert Hoover's watch. Number two, there have been times when, you know, jobs have gone up and down dramatically, but a lot of it has had to do with things that have affected our population. For example, after the Civil War, we had so many people who had died that there was this boom that came about as a result of the same thing after the flu epidemic in 1919. That was one of the things that fueled the Roaring Twenties, with so many people were dead. So just like in medieval Europe with the Black Death. Anyhow, that's it. Chris, thanks for the question. Good to hear from you. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. In the ongoing criminal trial of former Tyco International CEO Dennis Kozlowski and Chief Financial Officer Mark Swartz, prosecutors have presented an enormous amount of evidence of how the two could have swindled more than $600 million from the company. But only recently has the crime been quantified in the cost of jobs. Prosecution documents from Tyco itself allege the actions of Kozlowski and Swartz cost at least 70,000 Tyco employees their livelihood.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
It was only announced after the fact. Walmart's board of directors held their annual meeting last week in China. It is one of only a handful of multinational corporations to do so. A company spokesman says the trip was designed to give Walmart's directors a better sense of potential for the company's prospects in China, although its obsession with low prices has caused problems there. Not only has Walmart faced criticism for conditions of Chinese factories making goods for export to U.S. stores, but tensions exist between the company and the Chinese government over Walmart's refusal to let workers at its stores in China join the official state labor union.
Flip-flopping from their usual roles, Boston police officers announced they will be protesting outside the Democratic National Convention. Members of the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association have been working without a contract for 2 years. Bill Johnson is executive director with the National Association of Police Organizations, a coalition representing over 200,000 police officers nationwide.
Just about every single group of employees within the city of Boston is currently being forced to work without a contract.
Boston Mayor Thomas Menino reached tentative agreements with two of the city's four police unions last weekend and is anxious to settle with unions threatening to picket outside the July convention.
And they would ask all people to honor that picket line, to not cross the picket line out of respect for the difficulties that the men and women who are working as police officers in Boston are operating under.
Wages are the main sticking point. The mayor has offered a 0% raise for the first and second year, followed by an incremental raise in the third year. Police want parity with a firefighters union who earn 18% more.
More than 100,000 government workers in Thailand gathered in Bangkok today in celebration of a successful drive to stop the privatization of the country's largest electric utility. One quarter of Thailand's electricity generating authority was to be sold to private investors in May, but months of protests by tens of thousands of state workers forced the government's reversal over the weekend. However, protests are planned to continue until demands for a public hearing over the policy of privatizing state assets are met. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. With a defense spending explosion underway, one would hope those companies reaping the rewards would see fit to pay their fair share back to the Treasury in taxes. Think again. A recent audit of defense contractors by the General Accounting Office found 27,000 contractors owe a collective $3 billion in back taxes. Most of the missing money came from payroll deductions made but never sent to the IRS, and the audit singled out 47 contractors who've siphoned off that money for personal use.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Love is a burning thing, and it makes a fiery ring, bound by wild desire. I fell into a ring of fire.
Well, welcome back. Tom Hartman here, 27 minutes before the hour. I'll tell you, the ring of fire that the love of free trade has caused our country to fall into is a terrible thing. This article from yesterday's Wall Street Journal, Bush seeks to use backlash on jobs as lever on India. I'll bet you didn't know. I'll bet you didn't know that in India, that ever since 1947, they've been doing the same thing that we were doing from 1947 up until basically, you know, Ronald Reagan started taking this thing apart. Bill Clinton just kicked the doors wide open with NAFTA and GATT, and now George W. has shot off the hinges. That the Indians since 1947 were doing the same thing that we started doing in 1784 when Tench Cox and the other folks in, you know, Ben Franklin was another one who was very involved in that, got the first tariffs passed in the United States to protect domestic industries.
Oh, he's a protectionist.
Yes. So here, I just have to share, this is just incredible. This from yesterday's Wall Street Journal. The U.S. wants India to reduce its agricultural industrial tariffs and quotas and liberalize government procurement rules. Which means, in other words, see, government procurement rules in India, the government can only buy things from Indian companies. And we want them to change that so that, for example, Halliburton, which is technically a Cayman Islands company, can do business in India with the government. India says, no, sorry, if we're going to spend our taxpayer dollars, it's going to go to companies that reside in India, have their headquarters in India, are owned by Indians, and pay taxes in India. And of course, the conservatives here think that's a dumb idea. When Democrats tried to put forward a bill requiring any of the contractors in Iraq who are getting government dollars for the reconstruction of Iraq to be American-based companies that pay taxes in the United States, which would, of course, disqualified Halliburton, among others, among the many big friends of this administration. The conservatives shot it right down. Right down. That thing lasted one day. So anyhow, we're asking India to do this. We're asking them to drop their last year, the Wall Street Journal, trade between the two countries totaled $18 billion. India had an $8 billion trade surplus with the U.S. last year, a 50% increase from 5 years earlier. Now, why is that? Because India has a trade policy. The United States doesn't. Our trade policy is let the corporations decide. They call it let the market decide. Sorry, there is no such thing as a market. The market is the creation of government. Government creates the currencies. It creates the court system. It creates the infrastructure. It creates the educated workforce. It builds the roads. It offers the police. It offers the fire. All of that stuff is necessary for a market to exist. There is no such thing as a market. It didn't come here from outer space. It wasn't brought to us by Santa Claus or the Easter Bunny. The market is a creation of government. There's no such thing as a free market. Sorry. So when they say we should let the free market decide, what they are really saying is we should let the largest and strongest corporations decide. It's very simple to figure out how to read through the rhetoric here. For the moment, the Wall Street Journal adds, the government of India is resisting the U.S. gambit and is threatening to increase its own pressure on Washington. They're going to fight back. Senior Indian officials led by Commerce Minister Arun Jaitley say that unless the U.S. ensures the free flow of service jobs abroad, in other words, we have to keep allowing our companies to outsource to India. If we don't do that, India might try to stall resumption of global trade talks. Restarting the talks is a top Bush administration goal. See, these global trade talks will put the corporations even more in charge of the American and the world economy. What we are seeing here is an absolute loss of sovereignty, my friends. The loss of democracy. It is being replaced by what most classical economists and historians would call feudalism or serfdom, rule by the rich. The three classic ways that humans have been dominated throughout the 7,000 years of the history of civilization. Number one, rule by warlord kings. Number two, rule by theocratic popes and mullahs, people who said God told them to do it. And number three, rule by the rich, also known as feudalism. And they're all very stable forms of government. Conservatives say we really need to have rule by the rich. I mean, they don't call it rule by the rich. We really need to have the free market making the decisions. It'll be a stable form of government. They're right. England during Dickens' time was very stable. The poor were poor, and they were quiet. They shut up. If they spoke up, they got slapped down. There was no middle class. There was a merchant class. It was very small. It was sort of the middle class, I suppose you could call it. And there was there was the rich and powerful. That was it. And that's the direction we're moving in the United States. But India says, no, we're not going to go down that road. We are not. I'm sorry. We're not going to do voodoo economics in India. The Indian minister is a leader of the bloc of developing countries, the Wall Street Journal reports, that helped torpedo world trade talks in Cancun, Mexico last year. Cutting agricultural tariffs and quotas would be difficult for India, Mr. Jaitley said. Yeah, of course. I mean, why shoot yourself in the foot just because George Bush did it to America? And Bill Clinton did, and George Bush before him did, and Ronald Reagan did. The last president that had a rational trade policy in the United States was Jimmy Carter. And yes, the economy did expand under Carter. Since it won into, so back to the Wall Street Journal. Since it won independent, Carter created, as I recall, around 10 million jobs in the 4 years he was in office. It wasn't anything close to what Bill Clinton did, but, you know, it wasn't popcorn. Since it won independence in 1947, India has used trade policy to protect its hundreds of millions of subsistence farmers, reports the Wall Street Journal. India's tariffs on farm goods are as high as 112%. In other words, if you want to import wheat into India, people in India are welcome to buy our wheat. But if you sell it to them for $10 a bushel, they have to pay $10 a bushel, they would have to pay $11.20 tax. So the total cost to them would be $21.20 a bushel. They're unlikely to do that, so they buy wheat from Indians in India. Gee, what a novel idea. I mean, it only worked for 200 years here, before Reagan came along with voodoo economics. Overall, the Wall Street Journal reports, all industrial tariffs in India remain at an average. This is an average of all the industrial tariffs in India. The tariff is a tax that you charge on an imported good at 20% compared with 3% in the United States. Yes, we still have some tariffs left here in the United States. We do have some industries that we protect. All of the major contributors to the various political parties. Total worldwide revenue from India's exports of software and services continues to surge, reports the Wall Street Journal. Revenue growth of 26% to $12 billion is expected for the year ending March 31st. So India's growing. They're growing their middle class, and they're doing it in a rational way. And we're all going, oh, no, we're losing our jobs to India. Isn't it terrible? Do something. Well, we did something. We started with Ronald Reagan. That's why we're losing our jobs to India. My friends, very simple. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to be on the program. Frank in Duggar, Indiana is on the line. Hey, Frank, welcome to the Tom Hartman Show.
Hey, how you doing, buddy? Been listening to you. Enjoying it.
Thank you.
I want to ask just a simple question. Why is it when the Republicans get in office, our gas prices go up, we go to war, and we lose our jobs?
Because they don't. It seems to happen though. Now, yeah, let's cut them some slack. I mean, it used to be that people said that.
Why?
The war part about the Democrats. I remember, Bob Dole. Bob Dole, back in the presidential election that he was running in, was blaming Democrats for wars, and he said, you know, Lyndon Johnson in Vietnam, Franklin Roosevelt and World War II, and it was just going through the Democrat wars, and what's his name, World War One, and but I don't know, I don't have a glib answer for you. I'm sorry.
It's the mark of the beast.
Yeah, I think this. Frankly, I think this goes beyond Republican and Democrat. There are Democrats out there who are as conservative as a lot of Republicans, and off the wall. And there are some very, very rational Republicans. There actually are. I mean, you know, Olympia Snowe, George Voinovich, Jim Jeffords was one of them until he had enough and said, enough of this, I'm bailing out. He's an independent now. So I'm not willing to, unlike unlike the cons who try to make it real simple, paint it black and white and say, you know, it's our team or nothing.
It just seems that way.
Yeah. No, well, the reality is, if you look at over the last hundred and some odd years, I've seen the chart. In fact, it's floating around the internet a lot right now. You look, it's a little more than 100 years. If you look at the stock market performance and the various administrations that have been in power during those times, you discover that the stock market generally does better under Democrats than it does under Republicans.
Always.
In fact, Hang on just a second. Here, okay. Here we go. This is comparing just Clinton and Reagan. Jobs grew 43% more under Clinton than they did under Reagan. Gross domestic product grew 57% more under Clinton than it did under Reagan. The Dow went up 700% more under Clinton than under Reagan. People say, well, that was a bubble. Okay. Yeah. Let's say 300%. The NASDAQ grew by 18 times as much under Clinton as under Reagan. Spending, federal spending, grew 28% under Clinton's during Clinton's 8 years. It yeah. grew 80% during Reagan's 8 years.
Well, see, right now I'm retired, so, you know, I'm kind of fairly comfortable. And but I remember the Clinton years, and they were quite pleasant for a working man.
Yeah, well, the debt under Reagan grew, the national debt grew 187%, but under Clinton's administration only grew 43%. In fact, Clinton got a large surplus, whereas the deficit grew by 112% under Reagan.
Wow.
National income grew by more than 100% under Clinton, 100% more than during Reagan's time. Personal income grew 110% more than Reagan. And this, these are, and the source for these statistics is the Bureau of Labor Statistics, www.bls.gov. I mean, this is not, you know, some left-wing website.
We need to have a few farmers run for president of political office so we could get some grassroots people in there.
Yeah, if there's any left. I mean, it's yeah. most farmers have become sharecroppers. They become employees of big corporations because they've had
really?
To sell their farms. Here's the stats I just said. This is called Shock and Awe, Democrats Create Job and Wealth. From Harding in 1921 to Bush in 2003, okay, just looking at that window, Democrats held the White House for 40 years, Republicans for 42.5 years. Democrats created 75,800,000 new jobs. Republicans created 36,400,000 new jobs. So it's about 2-1. The per-year average... An average year during that time, Democratic administration, the average was 1,800,000 jobs created. Republicans was 800,000 jobs created, 856,400. Republicans had 9 presidents during the period, and 6 had depressions or recessions. The Dow grew by 52%
exactly.
more under the Democrats than it did by under Republicans, and the gross domestic product grew by 43% more under Democrats than Republicans during the period from 1921 to 2003. So, you know, but again, I don't think it's Democrat-Republican. I think it's conservative versus liberal, and I'm gonna rescue that word.
Okay, Mr. Hartman.
Yes, sir.
Thank
Frank.
You very much. You're doing a great job, and we need more people like you out there in the public. You know, trying to protect the little guy.
Thank you, Frank. I'll carry on. Thanks for your call. I appreciate it and your kind words. Warren Buffett, the world's second richest man, behind Bill Gates. Just issued his annual letter to the shareholders of his investment corporation, Berkshire Hathaway. Very insightful, very interesting, this stuff. He points out the fact that the United States right now is trying to regulate trade, international trade, by monetary policy. Now, for those of you who go, now, what's he talking about? For a long time, this stuff really mystified me, too, and I am so pleased that I figured it out, that I feel an obligation to share it with people. Trade policy is where you say, okay, we're gonna say that we want to make sure that our shoemaking industries in the United States don't end up going offshore. So you put up you enforce a trade policy around making shoes. The typical way to do it is with tariffs, with taxes. So you say, for example, if to make a pair of shoes, take, you know, if there's an hour's worth of, or a dollar's worth of labor, well, say it's an hour's worth of labor in a pair of shoes. It's not, but let's say it was. I guess it depends on the shoes. You know, nice Italian shoes. Anyhow, let's say that there's an hour's worth of labor, and that labor is worth $15. And, you know, at market rates, I'm just pulling numbers out of the air here. But let's say that that's what we figured out. And if somebody wants to make that same shoe with an hour worth of labor that they can buy for 15 cents in China, I mean, you don't restrain people from doing trade. There really is no restraint of trade. You say, fine, you can go over to China and you can have your shoes made there for 15 cents worth of labor. But when you bring them back into the United States, when that container arrives at the port of Los Angeles, uninspected container, because they're not doing our homeland security. When that container arrives at the port of Los Angeles, and it's coming through customs, you're going to have to pay a tariff, a tax, a duty. And that duty on that pair of shoes that have 15 cents worth of labor in them is going to be $14.85. Say, wait a minute, then the cost of labor on the shoes is the same if I make them in the United States as if I make them in China. You see, that's called a trade policy. It's been that way in the United States from 1784 until Ronald Reagan came along.
But that's protectionism.
Yes. You do it rationally. You don't do it across the board, but you do it rationally. China does this. India does this. Japan does this. Pretty much any country that hasn't worked its way so badly into debt to the IMF that they've come in and they've said you have to drop your barriers to trade does it this way. Very, very straightforward. Very straightforward. I don't know what's... Yeah. No, we're potted up and ready. So anyhow, Warren Buffett, he says, prevailing exchange rates will not lead to a material let-up in our trade deficit. So whether foreign investors like it or not, they'll be continued to flooded with dollars. What he's saying is that George Bush is trying to drive down the value of the dollar to make imports more expensive. It's a way of kind of like trying to add a tax by making imports more expensive, but it's right across the board. So all it does really is kind of bull in the China shop. It damages the economy. And, yeah, it might bring back a few jobs, but this is not a policy. And Buffett said today, yesterday, the emperor has no clothes. Blessings to him. Stay tuned.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Stories of courage need to be shared. That's why we want to tell you about Senators Bob Graham and Bill Nelson. They have stood strong to protect our coastlines from exploration and drilling by powerful oil and gas companies. But the fight's not over. Congress is now pushing an energy bill that still threatens our coastlines with oil and gas activities, hands billions of dollars in tax breaks over to the oil, gas, coal, and nuclear companies, and could exempt polluters from clean air and safe drinking water laws. What's more, this so-called energy bill doesn't cut our dangerous dependence on foreign oil, fix what's wrong with our aging energy grid, adequately promote renewable wind and solar power, protect consumers, or increase the efficiency or security of our energy system. There is a better way. Call Senators Graham and Nelson at 202-225-3121. Thank them for their courage and ask them to reject this dangerous energy bill. Paid for by the Florida Sierra Club.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Turn on the lights. Take off the lights. Come over here. Stand on that chair. Yes, that's right.
Turn on the light. That's what Warren Buffett did. He pointed out in his new Berkshire Hathaway annual report that in 1952, a third of all federal tax receipts came from the corporate sector. A third of all of our taxes were paid by corporations. And last year it was, quote, 7.4% thanks to the tax breaks handed out to companies and their investors. If class warfare is being waged in America, Mr. Buffett said, my class is clearly winning. End quote. 1-866-889-8894. Thomas, a truck driver in Illinois, is on the line. Hey, Thomas, what's up?
Yeah, how you doing this morning?
Great.
Yeah, I want to talk to you. I don't think it's a matter of liberal versus conservative anymore. When you start merging business and government interests, it becomes fascism.
Yeah, I agree. I mean,
I think Bush and Cheney need to be called what they are. They're fascists. They're not conservative.
Well, they're certainly corporatists. I'm you know, most Americans don't understand the meaning of the word fascism, which is why I'm really reluctant to use it. But you're in a dictionary sense, you're absolutely correct.
Yeah, I think Mussolini said that should rightly be called corporatism because
yes.
of the purchase of government and corporate interests.
That's a verbatim quote, Thomas. Well done. Yep, that's exactly. And Mussolini was the guy who invented it, not Adolf Hitler. Hitler just borrowed it, and so it's not a Hitler
analogy.
Yeah,
that's a whole different thing. Nazism,
yeah.
fascism, two different things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Closely related, but still two different things.
Yep.
But that I just wanted to add that in. I think if we beat this guy, we got to call them what they are. They're fascists.
Yeah. It's...
And I've given your book, Unequal Protection, to my daughter-in-law who thinks she's a conservative.
Oh, that'll be interesting.
So maybe it'll help her.
Let her read that. That's great. Okay.
All right. Well, you have a good day, Tom.
Thanks, Thomas. Thanks for the call. Do good. Keep driving safely there. It's great to hear from you. By the way, those of you who like, you know, who have, if you go to tomhartman.com and you click on articles on democracy, you'll get all these pieces that I've written for commondreams.org. And Coreway Publishers hired an illustrator and an editor and put these things into a comic book. I mean, it's not a funny comic book. It's an illustrated book and 200 and some odd pages. And it's called We the People, and it's shipping this week. So you can find it in your local bookstore or Amazon or whatever, just as an FYI, and it's all those issues. Straight to the heart of truth. This is Tom Hartman.
From the field, but this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The war they are in has been declared over by the same man who lied them into it. Their reward? Combat pay cut in half. $1.5 billion cut to their family housing. $20 billion cut to military health care. No health care for reservists.
My answer is bring them on.
Thousands wounded, hundreds dead, and no end in sight. If we support our troops, why can't Bush? Or is this what they mean when they say an army of one?
For years, economists have defined the economic health of a country by its gross domestic product. Trouble is, every time a forest falls, the GDP goes up. With every oil spill, the GDP goes up. Every time a cancer patient is diagnosed, the GDP goes up. Is this how we measure economic progress? Economists must learn to subtract.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Michael Stinson in Hawaii. Halliburton has a multi-billion dollar contract to feed and house U.S. troops in Iraq, but there are problems. A food contractor that runs 10% of the dining facilities in Iraq claims that it hasn't been paid by Halliburton for months and is threatening to stop serving hot meals. The company, Event Source, serves 100,000 meals a day in Iraq under a contract with a Halliburton subsidiary. Event Source claims Halliburton owes it $87 million, including payment for George W. Bush's plastic Thanksgiving dinner with the troops. When you get stuck out there for $87 million, explains Event Source Chief Executive Officer Phil Morrell, it's a question of economics. An international group that usually monitors elections in developing democracies said Monday it would take a post at Florida precincts in November in hopes of averting another debacle when voters pick the next U.S. president. 4 years after Florida became the object of international ridicule, officials for the Catholic group Pax Christi USA will place monitors from 30 countries at polls in four Florida counties that were at the center of the 2000 U.S. presidential election dispute. The Washington-based group will ask its international organization to send monitors to Miami, Miami-Dade, Broward, Palm Beach, and Duval counties, where voting irregularities kept the outcome of the 2000 presidential race in doubt for more than a month. George W. Bush got no bounce from his first foray last week onto the campaign trail against Democrat John Kerry, a new USA Today CNN Gallup poll shows. Despite a series of speeches in which he attacked the Massachusetts senator's record and warned that the country would not be safe under his leadership, the poll shows that if the election were today, Kerry would beat Bush by 8 percentage points, 52-44% among likely voters. Of those polled, 45% said they are certain to vote for Kerry and 38% for Bush. That means the campaign is focused on the 17% of voters who say they are undecided or could change their minds. Another sign of trouble for Bush, men, usually a Republican strength, split 47% for Kerry, 46% for Bush. More after this.
Make a fast friend. Adopt an ex-racing greyhound. Greyhound Pets of America is a national nonprofit organization that finds loving homes for these friendly, loving ex-racers. Greyhounds make fantastic pets because they thrive on attention, generally get along great with children and other animals, and are usually pretty easy to housebreak. Call Greyhound Pets of America at 800-366-1472. Greyhound Pets of America, 800-366-1472.
With the U.S. presidential election campaign underway, late-night comedy television show hosts are taking a humorous look at the candidates. Jay Leno said after all the voting, Bush called John Kerry to congratulate him. I'm not sure what they talked about. I think we can rule out swapping war stories. David Letterman quipped, have you seen any of the new Bush television commercials? In one of the commercials, you see Bush for 30 seconds. In another commercial, you get to see Bush for 60 seconds, kind of like his stint in the National Guard. For Minuteman News Service, this is Michael Stinson in Hawaii.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
I have excellent news, Americans.
The Bushites have come up with a surefire plan to increase the number of manufacturing jobs in the USA. Yes, while Democrats merely complain about the demise of such jobs, George W. and his team are stepping forward with a creative can-do solution that I think can only be described as astonishing. Their plan is proposed in the Economic Report of the President. In it, George W.'s top economists assert that all of those people working in such fast food joints as McDonald's and Subway really are not part of the service economy, but more accurately, should be reclassified as manufacturing workers, just as those who make cars and other industrial products. After all, contend Bush's crack team of job classifiers, when you insert that meat patty, lettuce and cheese and ketchup into a slice bun, you are engaged in the combining of inputs to manufacture a product. No less so than those who assemble electronic parts to manufacture, say, a computer. Bush's innovative economists also note that manufacturing is officially defined as the mechanical, physical, or chemical transformation of materials into new products. And they claim, when you heat ground beef, you are, in fact, chemically transforming it into a burger. Of course, if Bush can redefine hundreds of thousands of hamburger flippers as manufacturing workers, then he can statistically hush the critics who've been pointing to the drastic decline in these production jobs. There's another upside for the Bushites, too. Since manufacturing gets special tax breaks, suddenly, Bush's backers in the fast food industry serendipitously qualify. This is Jim Hightower saying, I'm with Bush on this one. After all, by assembling nouns, verbs, and whatnot, I've manufactured this piece. And by applying the chemistry of my tiny brain cells, I've transformed raw words into a new product. Manufacturers of the world, unite! Now where do I go to get my tax break?
I'll just see who that is then.
Oh no! South American killer bees! They're going for my eye!
A swarm of killer bees. That's one thing you don't want in your house. One thing you do want in your house is a better-looking roof with Plitanium plywood from Georgia-Pacific. Other roof sheathing materials can swell at the edges, creating an unsightly checkerboard pattern under your shingles. Plitanium roofs provide a more uniform surface. Plitanium plywood. Build it better.
When you hear how big businesses get all the best technology for the best price, does it make you crazy? To calm down, here's a thought from the voice of reason. Get a Xerox M15i. It's not just a digital copier printer that gives you 16 quality pages a minute. It also scans and faxes in color. All that and more for a $66 a month lease. Big business or small, what could be more reasonable?
Call 1-800-ASK-XEROX for business lease details. Toner and photoreceptor sold separately.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, friends. It's your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio. Yes, indeed. Our program brought to you today by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MACS and 1-800-511-MAX or smalldog.com on the web. And the Organic Wine Company, ecowine.com on the web or 1-888-ECOWINE. And the Newsletter Factory, newsletterfactory.com, our sponsors. I'm proud of them and pleased to have them. The Karl Rove, President Bush's chief political advisor, told the FBI, and this is just kind of leaking out now, right? That the folks in the administration, apparently there are some folks in close with Rove who are not real happy with him for these kind of leaks to be happening. And he told last October when the FBI first began this intimidate. This investigation into the attempted intimidation of Joseph Wilson by outing his wife. Go after their families, right? Joe Wilson, of course, came out and said he knew who was doing this. This had the fingerprints of Karl Rove all over. Remember, he, in fact, here he
At the end of the day, it's of keen interest to me to see
whether or not we can get Karl Rove frog marched out of the White House in handcuffs.
Yeah, and he goes on to say that he didn't just throw that name Karl Rove out of outer space. I mean, he knows something's going on, and he knows what it is and who it is.
And trust me, when I use that name, I measure my words.
Yeah, and this guy's, you know, the former U.S. ambassador to Iraq and to other African nations, and certainly, you know, a competent diplomat and somebody who you know, measures his words, literally. So anyhow, he told the FBI in an interview last October that, yes, he circulated and discussed damaging information regarding CIA operative Valerie Plame. This is from an article in the American Prospect by Murray S. Wass called Plugging Leaks, that he circulated and discussed damaging information regarding CIA operative Valerie Plame and others in the White House. He passed it along to outside political consultants and journalists. This all according to a government official and an attorney familiar with the outgoing special counsel's investigation, or ongoing special counsel's investigation of the matter. So we have here, it appears, maybe Joe Wilson is right. He's got a book coming out in a few weeks. He says he's going to name the leaker, the person who called not only Bob Novak, but six other reporters. The other five of them had enough good sense to know that you don't damage your nation's intelligence apparatus by bringing down an entire CIA covert operation just to score political points and suck up to the president. But Robert Novak, of course, has a rather long and sordid and sleazy history with regard to outing, with regard to leaking information. In his defense, I suppose some people would say, hey, that's what journalists are supposed to do. I have a problem with it. I frankly think that there are limits to what journalists should do. But in any case, we have this situation here now where, according to the laws of the United States, treason has been committed by a senior government official. That's been acknowledged all along. Rove and other, this back from this article in the American Prospect by Murray Wass, the Rove and other White House officials described to the FBI what sources characterize as an aggressive campaign to discredit Wilson through the leaking and dissemination of derogatory information regarding him and his wife to the press, utilizing proxies such as conservative interest groups and the Republican National Committee to achieve those ends, and distributing talking points to allies of the administration on Capitol Hill and elsewhere. Rove is said to have named at least six other administration officials who were involved in the effort to discredit Wilson. And now we find out that this prosecutor has subpoenaed Air Force One records in this investigation. Was the president involved, or was Rove on Air Force One when this happened? They're looking at Louis Libby, Scooter Libby, the chief of staff for Vice President Dick Cheney. Nick Calio, the former assistant to the president for legislative affairs, the guy who helps the president, you know, work things through Congress. And National Security Deputy Stephen Hadley. Looks like these are high on the list. Well, what does George Bush think about the fact? I mean, you know, talk about the Army-McCarthy hearings. It's, you know, where Joe McCarthy went off saying, hey, we got to find the traitors in the State Department. You got a traitor in the White House, somebody who's damaging the security of the United States. And what does our president say about that?
And I don't know. We're going to find out. The senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
Yeah. No, I don't have any idea. But we may all have an idea soon. And so we'll see what happens. The story is still developing, as they say. The story is ongoing. In the meantime, George Bush reinventing himself. He's really not reinventing himself. I mean, he reinvented himself sometime back when he decided to leave the CEO boardrooms where, you know, he was well-dressed and traveled in corporate jets and, you know, the whole mansion thing. Of course, coming from a dynastic family, as Kevin Phillips has so brilliantly pointed out in his new book about the Bush dynasty, a multimillionaire coming from a family worth tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars. And when he decided to become governor of Texas, or when Karl Rove recruited him to become governor of Texas, decided to become a regular guy, and he's dusting that off again. This from the Center for American Progress. AP reports that President Bush is trying to shore up his regular guy image, recasting himself as a plain-talking, boots-wearing American with middle America tastes, an image he has cultivated for years to counter his background, end quote from the Associated Press. Specifically, the president is driving a pickup truck around his Crawford, Texas estate. That's because he's afraid of horses. Those of you who wondered how this guy can own a ranch and never ride on a horse, Ronald Reagan loved horses. George Bush is afraid of them. He won't get on one. So he drives a pickup truck. He refers to himself as a windshield cowboy. Now, what does that mean? Maybe he's been drinking too many pretzels again, or... Anyhow, attends sporting events and ends up on the windshield, and painting opponents is out of sync with much of the country. These are the new ads you've seen that the Bush's attack dogs are running for John Kerry. You know, $125 shirt, $75 haircut. Yes, another Massachusetts, you know, wealthy Massachusetts liberal. You know, I suspect this may backfire, because I think that there are enough Americans who remember that the last time this country was in serious trouble, a terrible economic disaster brought about by conservative economic policies under the Hoover administration, it was a millionaire Northeastern liberal named Franklin Roosevelt who saved us, who brought us out of that, and who successfully prosecuted World War II. So I think the fact that John Kerry is personally worth about $2 million, between $2 and $5 million, depending on how you figure it, and that his wife is worth $500 million, she's mind-bogglingly rich. I don't think anybody's going to care. I really don't. George Bush is going to try and play his little class warfare game here. I'm a member of your class, and Kerry's not. And, I'm sure that he'll, you know, some people will get sucked into it. One of the folks in our chat room earlier, which you can get to, by the way, by going to tomhartman.com and just click on the chat button. One of the folks in our chat room earlier had said something to the effect of, you know, why is it that people buy this stuff? You know, why is it that they vote against their own economic self-interest? You know, you got all this welfare, 3-to-1, welfare to corporations versus welfare to people. And that's not even welfare. I mean, you know, welfare is a very small part of that $54 billion. But just, you know, all forms of assistance. Why do they, well, the answer, of course, and I typed it into the chat room. The answer is because advertising works. There's a reason why people buy ads on radio programs, why they buy ads on TV. There's a reason why people want to advertise on the Super Bowl. There's a reason why you're seeing all those ads to refinance your house, and you're seeing all those ads to, you know, have us as your personal investment manager. The reason is because advertising works. People see ads, or they hear ads, and they start to think, hey, I ought to, you know, check that product out. And that's why George Bush is running around the country every day or two, giving a policy speech so that you and I, the taxpayers, pick up the $54,000 an hour expense of running Air Force One, and not to mention the security details and all the people in the White House who are, you know, setting these things up and making them happen and everything, so that he can have a fundraiser that evening and walk off with another $1 million and another $1 million and another $1 million. He was in California last week. He got $2 million. Why? Because advertising works. George Bush spent well over $50 million more than Al Gore did last time around. That's what it took to get people to see past voodoo economics and to ignore his past as governor of Texas, where he made emission controls and pollution controls voluntary, and you ended up with one of the most polluted states in the nation. Houston having some of the worst air in the country. It takes a lot of money. to get people to change their buying habits. You got to advertise a lot. So anyhow, that's why he's doing this. He's attending, and that's why they're running these ads. They're trying to portray Kerry as out of touch with the regular guy. The Center for American Policy, over the last 3 years, the White House has repeatedly showered its millionaire campaign contributors with tax breaks while ignoring the economic hardships that millions of regular folks are struggling with. But nonetheless, here's George Bush showing up at NASCAR. Yeah, right. All told, more than 8 million Americans are out of work. And a fifth of those have been out of work for more than 6 months. We haven't had this kind of a situation since 1930, my friends. Not since 1930. And our regular guy president says, and I quote, "The economy is getting stronger," end quote. Well, yes, there is a recovery for the rich underway. But not for you and me, not yet. And what it's going to take is some rational government policy. You got to get in there in the marketplace and make things work right. And it's not rocket science. It's been done before over and over again in this country. But they keep backing away from it. Anyhow, this is Tom Hartman. You're in the real free speech zone. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Humans have become a physical force changing the face of the planet. A new book tries to measure the impact. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Scientists have taken a timely approach to understand how people are changing the Earth's atmosphere and climate. Will Steffen is a co-author of a new book called Global Change in the Earth System. He says the book is meant to be sort of a time machine, comparing the Earth before humans to the impacts we're having today.
We start by looking at the Earth as it was before humans became an important force in the environment. In other words, before the Industrial Revolution, before the population explosion, and so on. Then the next part of the book actually takes humans a bit aside and say, what is it about the human enterprise that has changed? What are the things we're doing now that are different, and why are they impacting on the global environment? And then I think what's interesting is we put this new force back into the Earth. Now we have a new force here ourselves. How is the operation, the functioning of Earth changing because we are part of the Earth and we're now a geophysical force in our own right?
Steffen says to truly be accurate, computer models must include agriculture, forestry, fishing, and all our other activities in the global environmental equation.
Another thing we obviously have to do is to build better simulation tools, mathematical models of how the Earth actually operates. And there a very huge challenge, very big challenge, is to bring in the so-called human dimension, bring in humans, our economic activities, our political activities, integrated with the environment around us, so the fact there's one Earth system.
Steffen says one thing is clear, humans are having a massive impact on the global environment. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Here's today's Dalbob Report. Sociologists often turn to infant mortality rates as an indicator of a country's well-being, and by this measure, we're slipping. For the first time in more than 40 years, the overall infant mortality rate increased from 6.8 deaths per 1,000 in 2001 to 7 such deaths in 2002. The Centers for Disease Control speculates women's decisions to have children later in life may account for the higher rate, though the CDC's report makes no mention of poverty, joblessness.
Here's today's Dalbob Report. A recent report prepared by the Democratic staff of the U.S. House Education and Workforce Committee hangs the most solid number yet on the hidden costs of shopping at Walmart. The committee figures each Walmart store with a staff of 200 or more puts a $420,750 burden on local federal taxpayers for social services costs. These would include housing, education, energy, and tax benefits awarded to workers like those at Walmart who are not paid a living wage and for the most part do not have health insurance.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the TuneTracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the TuneTracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the Pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original TuneTracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back here in the middle of the vast radical middle conspiracy. Tom Hartman here, 25 minutes past the hour. Yes, the economy is improving. It's improving for George Yates. You don't know George Yates? Well, Dick Cheney does. George Yates has, at his home, at his mansion, held a fundraiser for Dick Cheney. And, you know, for Cheney and Bush, of course. And he says, well, you know, it's... here, this is just a great quote. He says, "I never discussed Otero Mesa with the vice president," says Yates. "Having him in my home for a political fundraiser and discussing personal business would be in bad judgment, would be in my judgment, bad form." Yes. Yeah, it is bad form to hold a fundraiser for somebody in your house and then tell them what you want in exchange for that. No, you don't do that at that time. What you do is you call them the day after. I mean, you know, there's something to be said for manners. Yates says the environmentalists, those nasty environmentalists, those people who don't want to get cancer from breathing pollution and poisoned water, how dare they? Those environmentalists are claiming that I was able to change a process to my benefit. But he says he never discussed this with the vice president during a fundraiser in his home. Yates Petroleum is the company that Yates owns. It's an oil and gas company. Actually, the whole company is owned by relatives of Yates. They were the number one donor to political campaigns in the 2002 election cycle in the state of New Mexico. The number one donor. Well, what did this guy get for this? Well, here's the story. This is from the Associated Press. The government has eased Clinton-era oil... Clinton-era. It's an era. By the way, if you want to weigh in on this, do you think that the American public is just going to buy this and, you know, hook, line, and sinker, that they're going to believe this and that George Bush is going to get reelected? I have to say, I think that there's a very good chance that George Bush is going to get reelected. And this is a running debate that I have with Louise. She's convinced that... people are going to go, oh, wait a minute, and vote for John Kerry. I don't know. Anyhow, here, back to this story. And our number, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to weigh in on these. 1-866-889-8894. The government has eased Clinton-era oil and gas drilling restrictions on a large tract of desert grassland in New Mexico in a decision that benefits a large Republican donor in the state. The donor, George Yates, says his contributions and fundraising assistance to Vice President Dick Cheney had nothing to do with the decision. But the Bush administration, quote, would allow 141 oil and gas wells over 7 million acres. This is our land, your land and mine. This guy's now getting to drill on. The Bureau of Land Management, this according to the Campaign to Protect People's Lands, has surrendered the demands of one oil company and the political power of the name to which it was connected. Has surrendered to the demands of one oil company. We've just, the BLM, the Bureau of Land Management, these are the people who are supposed to be protecting our land. They contrasted the Bush administration's plans for Otero Mesa, which is this
piece of land in New Mexico where this guy who had Dick Cheney in his house for a fundraiser wants to drill 141 oil and gas wells with the Clinton administration's plan, which was basically, hey, that's a protected preserve. And you know, for that matter, why don't we just do what they do in Iraq and say that oil belongs to the American people? And so if it gets pumped out, we get the money. I mean, why should this guy get the money? I'm baffled. Maybe you are, too. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
Walmart doesn't just dominate the discount retail and grocery industries. It's muscling in on a much more lucrative market, campaign contributions. Walmart is currently the second largest overall donor in the 2004 election cycle, according to an analysis by the Center for Responsive Politics, giving 85% of its donations to Republicans and 15% to Democrats. In the 2002 federal election cycle, Walmart came in 71st among the top 100 donors.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
It was only announced after the fact. Walmart's board of directors held their annual meeting last week in China. It is one of only a handful of multinational corporations to do so. A company spokesman says the trip was designed to give Walmart's directors a better sense of potential for the company's prospects in China, although its obsession with low prices has caused problems there. Not only has Walmart faced criticism for conditions of Chinese factories making goods for export to U.S. stores, but tensions exist between the company and the Chinese government over Walmart's refusal to let workers at its stores in China join the official state labor union.
Flip-flopping from their usual roles, Boston police officers announced they will be protesting outside the Democratic National Convention. Members of the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association have been working without a contract for 2 years. Bill Johnson is executive director with the National Association of Police Organizations, a coalition representing over 200,000 police officers nationwide.
Just about every single group of employees within the city of Boston is currently being forced to work without a contract.
Boston Mayor Thomas Menino reached tentative agreements with two of the city's four police unions last weekend and is anxious to settle with unions threatening to picket outside the July convention.
And they would ask all people to honor that picket line, to not cross the picket line out of respect for the difficulties that the men and women who are working as police officers in Boston are operating under.
Wages are the main sticking point. The mayor has offered a 0% raise for the first and second year, followed by an incremental raise in the third year. Police want parity with a firefighters union who earn 18% more.
More than 100,000 government workers in Thailand gathered in Bangkok today in celebration of a successful drive to stop the privatization of the country's largest electric utility. One quarter of Thailand's electricity generating authority was to be sold to private investors in May, but months of protests by tens of thousands of state workers forced the government's reversal over the weekend. However, protests are planned to continue until demands for a public hearing over the policy of privatizing state assets are met.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
With a defense spending explosion underway, one would hope those companies reaping the rewards would see fit to pay their fair share back to the Treasury in taxes. Think again. A recent audit of defense contractors by the General Accounting Office found 27,000 contractors owe a collective $3 billion in back taxes. Most of the missing money came from payroll deductions made but never sent to the IRS, and the audit singled out 47 contractors who've siphoned off that money for personal use.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
when the rains came. Down in the hollow, playing a new game. Laughing and running, hey, hey. Skipping and jumping.
And welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Isn't Van Morrison great? I used to do a radio show back in 1969 or 1970, and our theme song was Moondance by Van Morrison. I think it was the year that song came out. Anyhow, some of Hillary Clinton was, they did this, what is it, the gridiron thing, you know, where they make jokes about each other. It was held Saturday in Washington, D.C., and Hillary Clinton gets up and she says, the Clinton administration used to say it had moved millions from welfare to work. To which Bush could add, we've made that journey round trip. And she adds, I actually saw the vice president as we were walking in. I was getting out of my car. He was getting out of Justice Scalia's. And so then it's Cheney's turn to talk. Rudy Giuliani's sitting there in the room, right? And Cheney says, here's an unsigned question. He's reading a card. He says, here's an unsigned question. Mr. Vice President, don't you think it's time to step down and let someone else add new energy and vitality to the ticket? And then he turns and looks at Giuliani and he says, no, I don't. And Rudy, you need to do a better job of disguising your handwriting. And then he wraps up by saying, anyway, ladies and gentlemen, it's getting late and Nino Scalia and I have to get up early and go duck hunting. Yeah, it's great to hear people, you know, make jokes about themselves, but I don't think it's a joke. I mean, I think that Giuliani, for a year, I have been predicting that Giuliani will replace Cheney on the ticket, and that will be one piece of the October surprise that Bush is going to pull out of the hat in the months of September and October, just before November. The other piece will be, of course, the discovery of Osama bin Laden. 1-866-889-8894. Oh, I got international election monitors are coming to Florida. I got to tell you about this. This is a hoot. But anyhow, 1-866-889-8894 is our number if you'd like to program today. And Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Roy, what's up?
Oh, not a whole lot, except we got a little politicking going on here in the state. It hasn't hit full steam yet with this Otero Mesa sweetheart deal that Yates got. But Bill Richardson, our governor, who was is a Democrat and was the energy secretary and is well plugged in and everything else, is irate. And he's demanding a little state input on how we're going to tear up all this federal land.
Yeah, surprise.
And Domenici. I mean, I seriously question, and I say this in all seriousness, I seriously think that Pete Domenici might have had a mild stroke at some point. I've not been comfortable with the way that man's looked for the last 6 months, and he is making less sense than I've ever heard him make.
Domenici is your United States Senator, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, from New Mexico.
And he was violently. I mean, I have never heard him as full of venom in his reply to Richardson's comments. And he basically said, tell Richardson, by God, this is federal land, and keep his damn nose out of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's heating up, and I refuse to pay my 50 cents to kill good trees to read the Albuquerque Journal, and I don't waste my time to go online. So I don't even really know all of the local buzz about it.
Yeah, you know,
I actually
this,
heard this conflict on a little local radio, well, right wing radio news source this morning.
Yeah, it's symptomatic of a larger issue, though. I mean, this is happening, with Yates in New Mexico. It's happening all over the United States right now.
And you know, this is the big things that we kind of hear about. I'm wondering the little things that we're not hearing about.
Yeah,
that's the thing that concerns me. If, you know, some guy had thrown a couple hundred grand over here and he got a little contract, you know, maybe just a $10 million contract.
Yep.
Or he did this or he did that. And it's just absolutely, it's becoming so system-wide.
Yeah, and it's
and
it's
you know,
and,
it's like, and we're getting a dictatorship, not, and we're paying for it.
Yeah, and the reality is, Roy, that this isn't something that started with George W. Bush. I mean, we have to tell the truth about this. This is something that was going on under the Clinton administration. This has been going on for a long, long time. And really, I mean, it really, I think, you know, frankly, and I don't have any evidence to back this up other than my memory, but I think it really picked up steam under Lyndon Johnson's administration. I think he was the first administration to really start selling off the White House, and he had a long history of doing that in Texas politics. And,
that's right.
And in the United States Senate.
I don't disagree at all. But this is—it's gotten so blatant.
Yeah.
That's the thing that I guess is like you were talking about the joke with Scalia and Cheney getting out.
Yeah.
They would have never joked about that 10 years ago.
No.
And
20 years ago, it would have been, I mean, there would be felony investigations. 30 years ago, it would have been considered
a crime. 20 years ago, it wouldn't even happen.
Yeah. You're absolutely right.
So anyway, it's just kind of interesting. I'm going to have to go pick up a couple of, I'm going to have to kill a few trees and buy some of these, well, actually, I can get my mother-in-law's used copy of the journal.
Check it out.
Read up on the local spin on this. But it is just interesting because Domenici was just, right, just keep his nose out of this. By God, this is federal land.
Yeah.
And we got the control over this.
Yeah.
So and it'll be interesting to see how
and we got
out.
The campaign contributions, too, you know.
That's right.
Okay. Roy, thanks for the call. I appreciate
have a good
it.
One.
Okay, you too. 20 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894. Election monitors are going to take on Florida. Did you catch this story? This is Reuters. Put this on the wire today. An international group that usually monitors elections in developing democracies said Monday that it's going to take up posts at Florida precincts in November in hopes of averting another debacle when voters pick the next U.S. president. And the group is a Catholic group. It's called Pax Christi USA. And, I mean, this is one of those groups that travels around. If a third world country wants to have an election, and the government doesn't have the means to make sure that it's fair and, you know, free and all that sort of thing, these folks come in and put monitors in place. And they've decided that they're going to put monitors from 30 counties at polls from 30 countries at polls in four Florida counties: Miami-Dade, Broward, Palm Beach, and Duval, where voting irregularities happened in 2000. Yeah, it was statewide. I mean, the real rigging of the vote in Florida was when Catherine Harris and Jeb Bush conspired to bump 70,000, 80,000 mostly African-Americans off the vote, legitimate voters off the voting rolls, spent millions of dollars to do it. With this company, you know, to clean the voting roll, something that they'd never spent more than $300 to do before. Well, Florida Governor Jeb Bush is all upset about this. He says equating Florida's election system with that of a third world country is insulting. This is all part, said Jeb Bush, of some politically motivated thing that tries to scare people to somehow think their vote is not going to count. That's hogwash, hogwash. Yeah, right. At the same time, now see, since the 2000 election, Jeb Bush has installed through much of Florida touchscreen voting machines that produce no paper trail. And that in the 2002 election, numerous people reported that when they pushed the button for Jeb Bush's opponent, the Democrat who was running against him, I forget his name, pushed that button, that the machine recorded a vote for Jeb Bush. And, yes, sure enough, the company came forward, or the state came forward and said, we had a problem. There were some misaligned touch screens. They don't know how many. They don't know where they were. They do know that Jeb Bush won the election when the polls indicated that he might not. So now, and he's saying, no, but we're not a third world. So now U.S. Representative Robert Wexler, this is, you know, a congressman from Florida. A Florida congressman filed a federal lawsuit yesterday demanding that a judge order that the computerized voting machines In 15 counties in Florida, they use touchscreen machines, print out a paper receipt or a paper ballot. And paper record, actually, is the phrase he used. I think it should be, it should, you know, if you want to get technical, it should be a ballot and not a receipt. Because the ballot is what gets counted, and that's a paper trail, whereas the receipt, you'd have to call up everybody and say, hey, bring in your receipt, let's check it out. You know, that doesn't work. And he says, without these paper ballots, or this paper record, there is no way to conduct a manual recount, and there isn't. And this was the problem that Georgia had. And I am to this day convinced that something nasty happened in Georgia in 2002. And the Max Cleland actually did win that election, as all the polls showed. And that the Georgia governor, whose name is escaping me at the moment, the Democrat who was running for re-election, actually did win, as the polls are showing. Anyhow, we'll see what happens. USA Today, you know, in the next election, I am not one of those who thinks that that the odds are very high that widespread voter fraud is going to happen as a result of these machines. And the reason why, I think, is because people like Bev Harris and Rebecca Mercury and others have been writing about this. I wrote one of the first articles outing this stuff in Common Dreams well over a year ago. I wrote a piece for MoveOn.org that they mailed out to 1.4 million people about 6 months ago, a roundup piece on the problems of electronic voting machines. And we've shaken enough people up. I mean, I think that, you know, speaking out has worked. And you had Representative Rush Holt introducing his bill in the House. There's a similar bill in the Senate to require voting machines to be randomly checked and print paper ballots and all those kind of things. So I am guessing that there may be some voter fraud in some places. I mean, Florida is notorious for it. We saw it in 2000. We saw the fingerprints of it in 2002. And I'm guessing that unless the Wexler's lawsuit goes through, you're probably going to see some of it in 2004. But I don't think it's going to be as huge and systematic as the conspiracy theorists are afraid. And I think the reason why is because people are sensitized to it now. And hopefully the Democratic Party is going to get concerned. And frankly, the Republican Party should be concerned about it. I mean, what happens if you've got a Democrat in power and that Democrat decides, hey, I can rig these machines. Republicans could do it. I can do it. Now, the machines are run by the companies, not by the government. See, this is one of the problems with privatization. And because the machines are run by the companies, and one of the companies was founded by a family that believes that the United States Constitution should be replaced by the Bible, and another family and another voting machine company is headed up with a CEO who wrote a letter to Republican contributors in Ohio saying he would do everything in his power to make sure that that George Bush wins in 2004, I think, frankly, that was just unseemly. I don't think he was declaring that he was going to get into voter fraud. I think it was just a poor choice of words. But we'll see. But anyhow, here are the latest poll. This is in USA Today today. After locking up the Democratic presidential nomination, John Kerry leads President Bush 52-44%. Apparently, a week of ads has not given Bush the bounce that he thought it would. And why? Well, most people say Kerry's going to handle domestic issues better. I mean, you've got this incredible irony of Bush having an ad in which you see a flag-draped body. Now, of course, the ads were done by actors. Those are not real firefighters in those pictures. But that's okay. I don't have a problem with that. In advertising, you use actors. But the image, I mean, most people are going to look at it and think that's a real 9/11 image of firefighters carrying a stretcher with a flag draped over the body. But the extraordinary irony, in my mind, is that George Bush, by executive order and by rulemaking, has made it illegal for us to see the flag-draped coffins of our young men and women coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. It's illegal for you to see them. And yet, at the same time, and why? Well, because we don't want to exploit the dead. Don't want to exploit the dead. So we're not going to show you flag-draped coffins coming back from Iraq or Afghanistan. But, by the way, in our campaign ad, there's a flag-draped coffin. Some days you think, like, you know, somebody's got to be saying, you know, don't look at the man behind that curtain. Anyhow, the reason why 52% of Americans say they're going to vote for Kerry and only 44% for Bush appears to be the economy. Bush rates higher on the poll in foreign affairs and national security, and that's, of course, what he's hammering on. He's saying, I'm a war president, and we're at war, and you got to worry. Man, if you're scared, you should vote for me. You translate it down, that's what his campaign is basically saying. But on health care, on education, on Social Security, on the environment, on the economy, two-thirds of those people who were polled in this poll that was issued today in USA Today, two-thirds of them said the economy is going to be more important to them than war on terrorism when they vote. Now, that may change if in September or October, number one, Osama bin Laden gets caught and it turns into a PR media circus. By the way, you recall, of course, we have already caught the mastermind of 9/11. I can't even remember the guy's name. He's gotten so little coverage. The guy who actually masterminded it. Sheikh Khalid? Is that it? Yeah, Muhammad Al-Khalid? He's in jail. But anyhow, if that happens or if there's an attack on the United States, all bets are off. 10 minutes before the hour, this is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is E-C-O-I-N-E.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
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 Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Bringing you Uncommon Sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You can hear the people say, we want democracy back in the United States of America. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here. 4 minutes before the hour. George W. Bush and Tony Blair. This is from Reuters. George W. Bush and Tony Blair probably knew they were exaggerating the threat from Iraq when they were making the case for war, according to former Chief UN Weapons Inspector Hans Blix. The U.S. President and the British Prime Minister ignored the few caveats in reports from intelligence services on Iraq's nuclear, chemical, or biological weapons programs, he writes in his account of the months leading up to the U.S.-led invasion. Blix said, quote, it was probable that the governments were conscious that they were exaggerating the risk they saw in order to get the political support they would not otherwise have had. So unfortunate, just so unfortunate. Greg Pallast wrote just an absolutely brilliant piece recently. He snuck through the barriers and got to interview some of the wounded soldiers, and it's heart-wrenching. I mean, it's just extraordinary, and that this could have happened. And there is no good justification for it, that intelligence was hyped. And then the intelligence was hyped, and the administration says, no, we're not going to investigate that. Now, we got it wrong, David Kay. We all had it wrong. But no, we're not going to look into that. And America can do better than this. America has a noble and proud tradition. I mean, yeah, we've screwed up a few times. Sure, the Gulf of Tonkin resolution and the, you know, remember the USS Maine. We've screwed up a few times. I'll give you that. But we still, I believe, the United States is still the holder of the torch of liberty for the world. We're the ones that other nations look to for as an example. And we can do better than this. We can do so much better than this. And we must, we absolutely must, bring back democracy to the United States. This is Tom Hartman, our program, The Pill That Will Help You Escape the Matrix.
The machinery for change, and it's here they got the spiritual thirst.
It's here the family is broken, and it's here the lonely say that the heart has got to open in a fundamental way. Democracy is coming to the USA.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Some corporate executive perks have legendary status, like former GE chairman Jack Welch's post-retirement Manhattan apartment and Knicks tickets, or former Tyco CEO Dennis Kozlowski's Mediterranean birthday party for his wife, all on the company tab. But most executive perks go unnoticed, thanks to weak rules at the Securities and Exchange Commission, which allow companies to classify such spending as general unspecified business expenses, exempt from public disclosure.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
With drug prices so much lower, it's no wonder America's seniors are getting on the bus and heading to Canada. Though it's technically illegal under FDA rules, senior citizens groups from northern states now routinely charter buses to Canadian pharmacies. Lawmakers in Ottawa created the patented Medicines Prices Review Board to bargain for lower prescription drug costs, and as a result, Canadians pay 30 to 70% less than U.S. citizens.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Michael Stinson in Hawaii. Halliburton has a multi-billion dollar contract to feed and house U.S. troops in Iraq, but there are problems. A food contractor that runs 10% of the dining facilities in Iraq claims that it hasn't been paid by Halliburton for months and is threatening to stop serving hot meals. The company, Event Source, serves 100,000 meals a day in Iraq under a contract with a Halliburton subsidiary. Event Source claims Halliburton owes it $87 million, including payment for George W. Bush's plastic Thanksgiving dinner with the troops. When you get stuck out there for $87 million, explains Event Source Chief Executive Officer Phil Morrell, it's a question of economics. A national group that usually monitors elections in developing democracies said Monday it would take a post at Florida precincts in November in hopes of averting another debacle when voters pick the next U.S. president. 4 years after Florida became the object of international ridicule, officials for the Catholic group Pax Christi USA will place monitors from 30 countries at polls in four Florida counties that were at the center of the 2000 U.S. presidential election dispute. The Washington-based group will ask its international organization to send monitors to Miami-Dade, Broward, Palm Beach, and Duval counties, where voting irregularities kept the outcome of the 2000 presidential race in doubt for more than a month. George W. Bush got no bounce from his first foray last week onto the campaign trail against Democrat John Kerry, a new USA Today CNN Gallup poll shows. Despite a series of speeches in which he attacked the Massachusetts senator's record and warned that the country would not be safe under his leadership, the poll shows that if the election were today, Kerry would beat Bush by 8 percentage points, 52-44% among likely voters. Of those polled, 45% said they are certain to vote for Kerry and 38% for Bush. That means the campaign is focused on the 17% of voters who say they are undecided or could change their minds. Another sign of trouble for Bush, men, usually a Republican strength, split 47% for Kerry, 46% for Bush. More after this.
Make a fast friend. Adopt an ex-racing greyhound. Greyhound Pets of America is a national nonprofit organization that finds loving homes for these friendly, loving ex-racers. Greyhounds make fantastic pets because they thrive on attention, generally get along great with children and other animals, and are usually pretty easy to housebreak. Call Greyhound Pets of America at 800-366-1472. Greyhound Pets of America, 800-366-1472.
With the U.S. presidential election campaign underway, late-night comedy television show hosts are taking a humorous look at the candidates. Jay Leno said after all the voting, Bush called John Kerry to congratulate him. I'm not sure what they talked about. I think we can rule out swapping war stories. David Letterman quipped, have you seen any of the new Bush television commercials? In one of the commercials, you see Bush for 30 seconds. In another commercial, you get to see Bush for 60 seconds, kind of like his stint in the National Guard. For Minuteman News Service, this is Michael Stinson in Hawaii.
Minuteman Newsbreak is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
I have excellent news, Americans. The Bushites have come up with a surefire plan to increase the number of manufacturing jobs in the USA. Yes, while Democrats merely complain about the demise of such jobs, George W. and his team are stepping forward with a creative can-do solution that I think can only be described as astonishing. Their plan is proposed in the Economic Report of the President. In it, George W.'s top economists assert that all of those people working in such fast food joints as McDonald's and Subway really are not part of the service economy, but more accurately, should be reclassified as manufacturing workers, just as those who make cars and other industrial products. After all, contend Bush's crack team of job classifiers, when you insert that meat patty, lettuce and cheese and ketchup into a sliced bun, you are engaged in the combining of inputs to manufacture a product. No less so than those who assemble electronic parts to manufacture, say, a computer. Bush's innovative economists also note that manufacturing is officially defined as the mechanical, physical, or chemical transformation of materials, and they claim, when you heat ground beef, you are, in fact, chemically transforming it into a burger. Of course, if Bush can redefine hundreds of thousands of hamburger flippers as manufacturing workers, then he can statistically hush the critics who've been pointing to the drastic decline in these production jobs. There's another upside for the Bushites, too. Since manufacturing gets special tax breaks, suddenly, Bush's backers in the fast food industry serendipitously qualify. This is Jim Hightower saying, I'm with Bush on this one. After all, by assembling nouns, verbs, and whatnot, I've manufactured this piece. And by applying the chemistry of my tiny brain cells, I've transformed raw words into a new product. Manufacturers of the world, unite! Now where do I go to get my tax break?
I'll just see who that is then.
Oh no! South American killer bees! They're going for my eyes!
A swarm of killer bees. That's one thing you don't want in your house. One thing you do want in your house is a better looking roof with Blightanium plywood from Georgia Pacific. Other roof sheathing materials can swell at the edges, creating an unsightly checkerboard pattern under your shingles. Plictanium roofs provide a more uniform surface. Plictanium plywood. Build it better.
When you hear how big businesses get all the best technology for the best price, does it make you crazy? To calm down, here's a thought from the voice of reason. Get a Xerox M15i. It's not just a digital copier printer that gives you 16 quality pages a minute. It also scans and faxes in color. All that and more for a $66 a month lease. Big business or small, what could be more reasonable?
Call 1-800-ASK-XEROX for business lease details. Toner and photoreceptor sold separately.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back to Talk Radio for the rest of us. A top Iraq nuclear scientist is seeking a probe by the United Nations. Do you get this? The father of this, the Associated Press story today, the father of Iraq's nuclear bomb program denied Monday that Saddam Hussein tried to restart his atomic activities. So didn't do it. You know, 13 years ago, he was trying to hide them, but, you know, then they kind of got taken apart by Scott Ritter and the weapons inspectors and all that kind of stuff. Jafar Dai Jafar, speaking publicly for the first time, this is the father of Iraq's nuclear bomb program, right? Speaking publicly for the first time since U.S. forces occupied Baghdad, also called for a United Nations probe of what its inspectors knew before the U.S.-led invasion. Inspectors, quote, reached total conviction, end quote, according to Jafar, that Iraq was free of nuclear weapons, yet failed to convey that to the Security Council because of U.S. pressure, he says. He says reports of the United Nations to the Security Council should have been clear and courageous. Well, Hans Blix and Mohammed El-Baradei actually, after 4 months of searching,
told the UN they found no evidence of a nuclear program. I mean, they told the whole world. We saw it on television. We can't find anything. Give us another month or two, and we'll know for sure. But as far as we can tell, there's nothing there. It all got destroyed. That's what they told the world. Now, it just amazes me when I hear basically partisan Republicans, you know, Bush supporters, saying, oh, you know, France knew there were weapons there. Britain knew there were weapons there. Germany knew there were weapons there. No. Sorry. Syria knew there were weapons. All the members of the United Nations, they knew there were weapons. No, they all thought there were not weapons there. Because that's what Hans Blix told them. And now you got this, you know, the father of the Iraqi nuclear program all upset. He should just go back and read the transcripts. We actually knew there were no weapons there. And we went anyway. I mean, this was a war of choice. And now our young men and women are paying the price for it. It's a sad and tragic event in American history. And now it moves along, moving along in the partisan realm. You know, party versus party. Here with the Republicans spying on the Democrats, Pat Leahy, our senator here from Vermont, is the ranking Democrat on the Judiciary Committee. And they issued a report about Republicans hacking into Democrats' computers. And I mean, keep in mind, this is what Watergate was all about. Watergate was an attempt by the Republican Party, actually specifically the Committee to Re-Elect the President, CREEP, CREEP. It was an attempt by the Committee to Re-Elect the President to break into the offices of the Democratic National Committee and, hijack whatever information they could and make use of it. And here it's happened again. And Pat Leahy says, this report indisputably shows that this secret surveillance was calculated, systematic, and sweeping in its scope. It ran over 18 months. I mean, there's a lot at stake here. Orrin Hatch and Pat Leahy are very concerned about this. Thousands of files stolen. It lasted a year and a half, this operation by the Republicans against the Democrats. You've got a couple of weasels, you know, Rick Santorum and Trent Lott, you know, are on the record supporting Manuel Miranda, the guy who stole the files, even after he admitted stealing them. In fact, Santorum says that the real aggrievement here was the content of the memos that they stole. Right? It's like, yeah, the victims are the villains. In Rick Santorum's world. They were passed out to right-wing interest groups, passed out to the press, and on it goes. Our third hour is kind of the best of the rest of the news here. I just want to go through a bunch of small things that all add up to a big thing in my mind. Teddy Kennedy is very concerned about what happened back in February, on February 20th, that was a couple of weeks ago, where George Bush did a recess appointment. Recess appointments were built into the Constitution. Well, let me get into that. We've got a call on the line. Let me, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to call our toll-free number. 866 is one of those newfangled toll-free numbers, 1-866-889-8894. 8894, and Roberta in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Roberta.
Oh, Tom, thank you for letting me through. Greetings and salutations for the people, to the people. This is Bobby McGee saying, freedom's not just another thing, but the main thing we ought to never lose.
There you go.
And I wanted to mention Abraham Lincoln's quote here and then tell you about the statutes were revised on the penalty for treason. It gave the court's discretion to substitute imprisonment at hard labor in 1909, not less than 5 years, and a fine of not less than $10,000 for treason. And this is Lincoln's quote, "Worse than traitors in arms are the men who, pretending loyalty to the flag, feast and fatten on the misfortunes of the nation.
That's brilliant.
Think of any truth more applicable to our present time.
You know, the year before last, when I was finishing up writing Unequal Protection, I read Carl Sandburg's biography of Lincoln, because I had to, you know, there's a chapter about Abraham Lincoln in my book. And it was amazing the level of corruption that happened during the Civil War that Lincoln basically had to tolerate because it was the only way he could get war material through. But his Secretary of War, whose name was Stanton, as I recall, was just continuously on the take. Lincoln was continuously flipped out about it, and he swore that he was going to clean it up after the war was over. Of course, he didn't live, you know, long enough to do that. But that was that your quote is, I'm sure, a good clean quote of Abraham Lincoln's, because that was
right on,
that was
right.
his big concern was the corruption of government from within by what today we would call corporate forces. Back then, it was simply referred to as rich folks or business interests.
Well, quote is in the context of a book I'm reading now, the chapter Treason in High Places, Treason under Article 3, Section 3 of the Constitution. And I think we also need to look again at the 14th Amendment, Section 3, because that does refer to people who've taken the oath to support the Constitution of the country. And, you know, we had a prison state. We had a police state in Florida, the last debacle. And then we have Jeb Bushy standing up and saying that he's insulted. Well, he himself is a great insult to any democratic-minded person. And about using the word fascism, you know, I don't think you have to be wide awake anymore to know what that word means. All you have to do is look it up in the dictionary. And if we don't call a spade, how are we going to clean the garden?
Yeah. Yeah,
okay.
It's okay.
And thank you so much, Tom Hartman.
You're welcome,
Robert. Wonderful. Keep it up. Beware. Be brave. And right on, Kachaton.
I'll do my best. Thanks, Roberta. Thanks for the call. It's always great to hear from you, and thank you for your kind words. Although, let me, you know, if one of you is listening who thinks that I am just totally off the edge and that I'm wrong, I would love to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Tell me I'm wrong. We answer the phone and ask what city you're from, but we don't filter calls here the way that many talk show hosts do. Bush on February 20th gave William Pryor, judge, attorney, you know, Alabama Attorney General William Pryor. Here's a guy who founded an organization called the Republican Attorneys General Association. And it's a fundraising group for GOP candidates for attorney general and attorneys general who are Republicans. He has attacked Roe versus Wade as being a wrong decision. He came right out, in the Supreme Court in the Texas sodomy case and said that homosexuality is the equivalent of, quote, prostitution, adultery, necrophilia, bestiality, possession of child pornography, and even incest and pedophilia, end quote. I mean, here's a guy who absolutely, I mean, intolerant is not a strong enough word to describe him. And the Democrats were holding up his nomination because he was not giving the Senate straight answers, and the answers that they were getting were raising a lot of questions. And in the Constitution, it says that if the Constitution it says that if a Congress is out of session. Now, keep in mind, this is back, you know, I mean, in the early days of the American Republic, senators and congressmen were not paid. You had citizen statesmen, like many of the New England states. I mean, we're on the edge of it right now. When I voted here in Vermont, I don't recall if it was this election or the one before that. It was a vote to raise the salary of state legislators up to something like $14,000 or $16,000. I mean, it's basically a part-time job. And for years, it was an unpaid part-time job. For most of the history of this state, and I know of New Hampshire as well. I used to live there. And so they put into the Constitution this thing that says that if the volunteers have taken time off, because they're only in Washington a few months out of the year to do the people's business, if they've taken time off and there's an emergency, the president can act on their behalf and appoint judges. Makes sense. Made sense in 1787 when they put the Constitution together. Makes sense now. But what's got Ted Kennedy all in a, you know, twisted in a knot here is that he says recess appointments can only come, quote, at the end of a Congress or the recess between the annual sessions of Congress, end quote. This is from Kennedy. In other words, first of all, Bush installed prior using this recess appointment power over a weekend. Congress was in recess for a weekend. Yes, that's an emergency. We have to invoke this constitutional clause and put this guy into the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, where he's in line for the United States Supreme Court. Kennedy says, no other Article III judge in the nation's history has ever received a recess appointment during a brief holiday period in the midst of a session of Congress. This is absolutely wrong. But he got away with it. He's done it twice, in fact. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. 1-866-889-8894. Tom Hartman discussing solutions and not false promises. 20 minutes past the hour. Stick around. We'll be back.
Years from now, the winter forecast in parts of the world might have more rain and less snow. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Global warming is likely to change patterns of rain and snow around the world. For parts of North America, that might mean winters that are wetter than today. Dick Weatherald is a climate expert with the U.S. government's National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. He studies the way patterns of rain and snow might change as the atmosphere warms up, and he uses the most up-to-date computer models in his work. Weatherald compared the results of his research with those from other computer systems.
And what we're seeing consistently is an increase in precipitation in middle latitudes during most of the winter season and early spring season.
Weatherald says those changes will affect the northern part of the United States and the southern part of Canada. He says the increase in winter precipitation is likely to come as more rain, not more snow. That could reduce the amount of water that percolates down into groundwater aquifers.
Rainfall tends to run off very quickly. Doesn't have a chance to run into the ground, whereas snowfall tends to melt off usually fairly slowly. And that slower melting allows the water to percolate into the ground and recharge the groundwater supply. It makes a big difference. Snowfall is good. Snowfall is very beneficial to the water table because it allows the water to go into the ground rather than simply running off.
Groundwater is essential for providing water to rivers and lakes and to wetlands that are fed by springs. It's also an important source of water for drinking and irrigation. Weatherald has written a paper on this research that will be published in the Journal of Climate this spring. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A series of tax breaks for wealthy Americans and a ballooning military budget has the federal government running a record deficit. What to do? If you're Alan Greenspan, try cutting Social Security benefits. 3 years ago, the chairman of the Federal Reserve told Congress that tax cuts wouldn't endanger Social Security benefits. Fast forward to last week when the Fed chief asked Congress to reduce the cost of living increases in Social Security checks. Greenspan also proposed rolling back the retirement age.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
Layoffs usually focus on those who go unemployed, but those left behind also pay a price in their health. Analysis of the Finnish workforce by researchers at the University of Helsinki, published in the British Medical Journal, found that when a company downsized staff by 18% or more, it sparked a significant rise in the number of sick days taken by surviving employees. The main culprit? Stress from a heightened workload and the loss of workplace colleagues.
Stories of courage need to be shared. That's why we want to tell you about Senators Bob Graham and Bill Nelson. They have stood strong to protect our coastlines from exploration and drilling by powerful oil and gas companies. But the fight's not over. Congress is now pushing an energy bill that still threatens our coastlines with oil and gas activities, hands billions of dollars in tax breaks over to the oil, gas, coal, and nuclear companies, and could exempt polluters from clean air and safe drinking water laws. What's more, this so-called energy bill doesn't cut our dangerous dependence on foreign oil, fix what's wrong with our aging energy grid, adequately promote renewable wind and solar power, protect consumers, or increase the efficiency or security of our energy system. There is a better way. Call Senators Graham and Nelson at 202-225-3121. Thank them for their courage and ask them to reject this dangerous energy bill. Paid for by the Florida.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to say, no. No, it's a corporation. Corporations should not have personhood. One of these days, I'm going to do a show on this. It's I wrote a book about it, it's worth revisiting. I think it's been 6 or 8 months since we really talked about it in depth on the program. But anyway, it's Mark McClellan here. Mark McClellan, the guy who has been the commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration, commissioner of FDA. George Bush has said he wants this guy to run Medicare now. And McClellan, as head of the FDA, has been saying that it's wrong to allow Americans to go to Canada to buy cheaper drugs. Which, of course, begs the question, where are all the dead Canadians? He says, well, it's a safety issue. Where are all the dead Canadians? If Canadian drugs are so dangerous, well, there are no dead Canadians. It's the same drugs. It's just that in Canada, they have a single-payer system. So the government, says, okay, we're going to need 50 million doses of penicillin this year, we project. And so they call up, Lilly or whatever. They call up a drug company and they say, what's your price on 50 million doses of penicillin? Whereas under the new Medicaid bill, it's illegal for states to do that. Or to band together to do that, to reduce their prices. Or for the federal government to do that. It's illegal. The drug companies get to sell their drugs at retail. And so here you've got this guy, Mark McClellan, who's been championing this as head of the FDA. And they're now going to put him in charge of Medicare. Bush wants to do it. And so, of course, to run the program, he has to first go before the United States Senate and get confirmed, right? Senators get to ask him some questions and, what's going on with you? What do you think about this and that and the other thing? They get to decide. And McClellan, he took on the wrong guy. He's taken on John McCain. He says he's not going to answer those questions until after he's confirmed. This is amazing. Here's the story. This from Salon.com. Medicare nominee avoids senator's queries. Mark McClellan, President Bush's choice to run Medicare, said Monday he won't answer senator's questions about his opposition to importing prescription drugs from Canada before he takes over the government health program. Republican leaders in the Senate want to vote to confirm McClellan by the end of this week, as the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services tries to put in place the Medicare overhaul that Bush signed into law last year. However, McClellan's rejection of the request from Republican John McCain of Arizona and Democrats Byron Dorgan of North Dakota and Debbie Stabenow of Michigan sets up the prospect that they will use Senate procedures to drag out the confirmation. McClellan, at his hearing on the confirmation on his nomination at the Senate Finance Committee, said he would answer the senator's questions, quote, as soon as this confirmation process is concluded, end quote. Oh, wait a minute, Mark. The process is why they're asking the questions in the first place. Dorgan, Senator Byron Dorgan, North Dakota senator, said through his spokesman, Barry Piott, quote, "That's an absurd response that borders on the arrogant." Borders on the arrogant. McClellan, or Dorgan, goes on to say he doesn't get to choose which senators can ask him what questions. McCain's spokesman says the Senator John McCain is still awaiting a formal response from McClellan. So we shall see what happens. It's interesting. You know, it's good theater. It's just good theater. It's really remarkable. What this every day there's a new surprise from the Bush administration. It is just truly remarkable. 29 minutes past the hour, exposing the con and conservative. Tom Hartman here with you. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. With a defense spending explosion underway, one would hope those companies reaping the rewards would see fit to pay their fair share back to the Treasury in taxes. Think again. A recent audit of defense contractors by the General Accounting Office found 27,000 contractors owe a collective $3 billion in back taxes. Most of the missing money came from payroll deductions made but never sent to the IRS, and the audit singled out 47 contractors who've siphoned off that money for personal use.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
It was only announced after the fact. Walmart's board of directors held their annual meeting last week in China. It is one of only a handful of multinational corporations to do so. A company spokesman says the trip was designed to give Walmart's directors a better sense of potential for the company's prospects in China, although its obsession with low prices has caused problems there. Not only has Walmart faced criticism for conditions of Chinese factories making goods for export to U.S. stores, but tensions exist between the company and the Chinese government over Walmart's refusal to let workers at its stores in China join the official state labor union.
Flip-flopping from their usual roles, Boston police officers announced they will be protesting outside the Democratic National Convention. Members of the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association have been working without a contract for 2 years. Bill Johnson is executive director with the National Association of Police Organizations, a coalition representing over 200,000 police officers nationwide.
Just about every single group of employees within the city of Boston is currently being forced to work without a contract.
Boston Mayor Thomas Menino reached tentative agreements with two of the city's four police unions last weekend and is anxious to settle with unions threatening to picket outside the July convention.
And they would ask all people to honor that picket line, to not cross the picket line out of respect for the difficulties that the men and women who are working as police officers in Boston are operating under.
Wages are the main sticking point. The mayor has offered a 0% raise for the first and second year, followed by an incremental raise in the third year. Police want parity with a firefighters union who earn 18% more.
More than 100,000 government workers in Thailand gathered in Bangkok today in celebration of a successful drive to stop the privatization of the country's largest electric utility. One quarter of Thailand's electricity generating authority was to be sold to private investors in May, but months of protests by tens of thousands of state workers forced the government's reversal over the weekend. However, protests are planned to continue until demands for a public hearing over the policy of privatizing state assets are met. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. With a defense spending explosion underway, one would hope those companies reaping the rewards would see fit to pay their fair share back to the Treasury in taxes. Think again. A recent audit of defense contractors by the General Accounting Office found 27,000 contractors owe a collective $3 billion in back taxes. Most of the missing money came from payroll deductions made but never sent to the IRS, and the audit singled out 47 contractors who've siphoned off that money for personal use.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Taking care of the business of talk radio here. Tom Hartman with you. 26 minutes before the hour, the prospect of U.S. oil firms making a quick return to Libya has risen. You see the BBC reporting on this. George would have you believe that we scared Gaddafi into giving up his nukes by going into Iraq. It turns out that Gaddafi's nukes were about a program that was about as sophisticated as your basic state university chemistry lab. I mean, it was not capable of producing anything. But what was really going on was Gaddafi was suffering under years of sanctions that went back to the first the disco bombing in Germany. And I believe it was Reagan, wasn't it, who fired those missiles, killed his daughter, his adopted 3-year-old daughter. And then on Clinton's watch, the downing of Flight 103 over Lockerbie, Scotland, Pan Am Flight 103. Maybe that was Reagan, too. I don't remember. Anyway, we slapped these sanctions on him, said he, you know, the guy, this is a rogue state, Libya. This guy's doing nasty stuff. And, he was going broke. He was having a hard time selling his oil. His economy was falling apart. And he's sitting around going, you know, and the Soviet Union fell, his sort of ally. And he's sitting around going, geez, this is no fun. What am I doing? I mean, I shouldn't be doing this. So he came in. He said, I give up. The prospect of U.S. oil firms making a quick return to Libya has risen after officials said company representatives are expected in Tripoli this month. So this we see, you know, so the Bush administration has said, fine, you give up, you know, do something symbolic. Do something so it looks like, you know, that makes us look good. And we'll let you do business with us. And Gaddafi says, well, you know, I don't have any terrorists anymore. I don't have any bombs. I do have this little laboratory here where we were playing around with uranium. Never did get to the point where we could make a bomb or anything. But, you know, you're obliged, I guess, if you're a third world country, to inspect the stuff. And so Bush said, oh, that's cool. You know, you can say that you're giving up your nuclear program. And, in fact, Bush is running around using that in his speeches now. It's really, I think, very sad. Anyhow, European oil companies are now already operating in the country, which is the world's ninth largest crude producer. Interesting coincidence. And Shalgam, the foreign minister, Mohammed Aberdeen Shalgam, a foreign minister of Libya, said, when America comes here, our oil production will be better, and we will have American technology. Yes, indeed. The Bush Green Watch for today. BushGreenWatch.org is the website. Bush plan would destroy species in order to save them. Over 350 scientists from the World Conservation Community released a letter to the Bush administration yesterday protesting a highly dubious policy change that could send many endangered species into extinction. The letter charges the Bush administration, with using questionable science to justify changes to trade policy under the Endangered Species Act. If enacted, the revised policy would allow the imports of endangered species or products derived from such species. And business likes it. Yeah, the pet trade is a multi-million-dollar industry that would also benefit from relaxed rules for importing exotic tropical fish and birds. The scientists who've been in the field, says Jack Kostiak of the National Wildlife Federation, are saying there are no checks that ensure the conservation is happening or that the last member of a species isn't being harvested. On the education front, moving through the news here, on the education front, George Bush's initiative to shake up education is facing protests. Democratic legislators in Oklahoma, this from a New York Times article by Sam Dillon yesterday, in Oklahoma are so unhappy with President Bush's No Child Left Behind school so-called improvement law, I threw in the so-called, that they drafted a resolution calling on Congress to overhaul it.
But at the last minute, one of the state's most conservative Republicans... Are you listening to this? One of the state's most conservative Republicans, State Representative Bill Graves, stepped up with his own suggestion, tell Congress to repeal it entirely. The resolution passed the Oklahoma legislature, and Mr. Graves got a standing ovation. So Oklahoma now, the state of Oklahoma, is now on the record. Mr. Bush, repeal No Child Left Behind. Back when they were putting this thing, I mean, this is what caused Jim Jeffords to leave the Republican Party, you may recall, was the sellout, basically, of America's children to large testing corporations. You can print a test for a couple of pennies. I mean, what does it cost? Print a half a dozen pieces of paper. But because the test is considered an intellectual property, that you can have a copyright on, and I'm not speaking in opposition to copyrights, by the way, as an author, because it is an intellectual property that you can have a copyright on, you can sell it for whatever you want, and you can prevent people from reprinting it. They can't make copies of it. I remember when I was a kid in school, the teachers used to take tests that were copies. They'd run them on the Mimeo machine. Can't do that anymore. Under the No Child Left Behind law, you have to buy your tests from one of these large, politically active, donate money to political candidates, testing corporations. The largest one doubled in size the first year of the No Child Left Behind Act, or at least it was set to. I mean, that was, you know, based on the information I got from Jim Jeffords' office was that if this law passes, this corporation will be twice as big. They went from $400 million to $800 million in a year. Because all these schools all across the country now are required to buy their tests. And they can, you know, $35, $40, $50 a test. Cost them a few pennies to produce it. It leaves a little profit that you can use to raise money for politicians. So the Oklahoma legislature now is saying no. And this is happening all across the country. At least 12 states now have passed by either one or both legislative chambers, according to the New York Times, at least 12 states now, in either the House or the Senate or both, have passed resolutions calling on Congress, quote, to amend or repeal the law, prohibit spending state money to carry it out, or otherwise criticize the law. This is from Sam Dillon's article in the New York Times yesterday. Senator Arlen Specter, who's the head of the Senate Appropriations Committee, noted that 138 Pennsylvania superintendents, school superintendents, are protesting provisions of the law. And he said, the pot is definitely boiling on this law. Yeah. He says, the law is good on standards and accountability, but it clearly needs some modifications because it's going through growing pains. Yes, Senator Specter, it's growing pains. The election, of course, is heating up, and George Bush is trying to roll out the culture wars. His father did a marvelous job with the flag burning. Remember that? We got to have a constitutional amendment to ban flag burning. It's a threat to the republic. The nation might fall if people are allowed to burn the flag. And it was a major issue when George Bush was running against Michael Dukakis. And Dukakis was saying, no, we don't want to amend the Constitution. And George Bush Sr. was saying, yes, we do. You know, we got to stop these flag-burning whatever they are. What, liberals? And so now, Junior, well, we got to have something to, you know, you got to have some red meat to wave before the base. And so the red meat, he says he's going to drag out is this gay marriage thing. I think it's going to backfire because I think that increasingly people are realizing that gay marriage is a civil rights issue. It's the same thing as miscegenation. It's the or however you pronounce that. It was illegal up until 1967 in the United States, in many states, for blacks and whites to marry, or for people of different races. I mean, it didn't just specify blacks and whites. And you know, we woke up. We said, hey, we need to redefine marriage. So you can marry to somebody who's not, you know, a member of your race. And that's an okay thing. In fact, it's probably a healthy thing for the human race. And, we, you know, and prior to that, we also the big revision in our marriage laws happened in the 19th century. And it happened incrementally over, you know, in various states over a long period of time. But it happened throughout much of the 19th century. And that was that women acquired the right to say no to a marriage, to an arranged marriage. So, I mean, you know, if Bush wants to say, we want to have marriage like it was in the Bible, then you can't marry outside your religion, you can't marry outside your race. A woman has no say in who she marries. But anyhow, the Newsweek, in their campaign coverage, I think it's this week's issue. Actually, this is a web exclusive by Jonathan Darman. The Newsweek website, MSNBC.com, posted it. Social issues are supposed to set young people on fire, they say. Abortion, the environment, equal rights. In the late 20th century, these issues made young Americans vote, rally, and riot in the streets. But that may be changing. In the latest Newsweek Gen X poll, 18 to 29-year-olds say they are most concerned about unemployment, the economy, and national security this election year. The firebrand issues hardly show up on young voters' radar screens at all. I think that's fascinating. It's just absolutely fascinating. Here we have, and speaking of national security issues, you've got the chief of NATO. This is an admiral, United States Navy admiral, who is in charge of United States naval forces in Europe. His name is Gregory Johnson. He's like the chief, not just of the U.S. naval forces in Europe, but on, you know, the U.S. commander of NATO forces in southern Europe. I mean, he's in charge of all these different armies. Dual job: U.S. commander of NATO forces in southern Europe and commander of U.S. naval forces in Europe. Said, we have to develop a much more robust security regime in the maritime dimension. It is quite flimsy at the moment. Quote, unquote. Some 95% of the world's commercial cargo moves by ship, with some 11 million containers traveling the seas every day, Johnson said, according to this interview in the New York Times, published by Reuters. And Johnson says there is only a tiny, tiny portion of 1% of those containers that we know about before they reach our ports. End quote. Here's another quote. He says, the volumes are such that over time, any would-be terrorist is going to work this out. And as I've mentioned before, the estimates are that it would cost between $6 and $8 billion. It's a large amount of money. I mean, it's chump change for Halliburton, but it's a lot of money. Between $6 and $8 billion to inspect every single piece of cargo coming into the United States before it leaves its home port, before it gets here. And boy, I hope and pray that the next attack doesn't come through our ports, because there's going to be so much. I mean, it's just, there's going to be so much I told you so Anyhow, Greg Palast, the Forgotten Soldiers of Iraq, Operation Iraqi Freedom. Remember Operation Iraqi Liberation? OIL. Of course, the name got changed from Liberation to Freedom once they realized what the acronym was. He writes this piece, and it's just, you know, his name's Maurice. He's 26 years old with a face like an angel and a computerized prosthesis where his left leg used to be. His name's Victor, and he still seems like a boy. His cherubic face set against blonde hair is plagued by an unanswerable question every time his restless eyes inadvertently fall on the stump. Why? His name's Steve, and you couldn't imagine a more all-American soldier, that is to say, if he hadn't lost his right arm. His name's Rob, bound to a wheelchair. He's mad at the whole world and explodes in a barrage of insults at everyone and everything for the loss of his right leg and the uselessness of his left. Palast says, he writes in this piece that was published in Common Dreams yesterday, It's on his website, gregpalast.com, P-A-L-A-S-T, G-R-E-G, palast.com. He said, the casualty statistics, curiously, the casualty statistics released by the Pentagon contradict those of the U.S. Army. While the Pentagon contends that 2,722 soldiers have been wounded in action and 417 in non-hostile fire as of March 1, the U.S. Air Force confides that it has flown approximately 12,000 wounded soldiers into Andrews Air Force Base over the last 9 months. Say what? We've flown in 12,000 wounded soldiers, but the Pentagon says that 2,700 soldiers have been wounded? With the severity of injuries sustained, it seems like the Pentagon's reduced estimates are meant to camouflage a scandal that could cost George Bush his re-election. Remarkable. Walter Reed Hospital is actually outsourcing patients to hotels. I mean, they're running out of space for these wounded veterans. What's next? This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is E-C-O-W-I-N-E.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter 788-9550 to get started today, or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000. $1,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the Pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the place where smart people get their news. This is the Tom Hartman radio program, and that's me. The White House finds itself at the center of a legal storm. Here we got U.S. Attorney Patrick Fitzgerald. He's continuing to look into the leaking of by Bob Novak of Valerie Plame's identity. Just some updates. I mentioned this in the last hour, but here's the updates on it. This is interesting. One of the key items included in the subpoenas to the executive office of George W. Bush was a transcript of a July 12th press briefing. They wanted the transcript of a press briefing held by Ari Fleischer. Now, routinely these things show up on the White House website. You know, whenever they have a press briefing, you find it on whitehouse.gov. But for some reason, this one particular briefing, July 12th, was missing. Now, it was on July 14th that Bob Novak published his column. Just to put this into context for you. We're looking, they had to subpoena the White House to get a copy of the press briefing that had been taken down from the White House website. And this briefing has now reappeared online. And it reveals efforts, this is according to the Center for American Progress, reveals efforts by the White House to, quote, personally discredit former Ambassador Joseph C. Wilson IV days before a columnist blew the cover of his CIA officer wife. Fleischer refers to Wilson as a lower-level official and said Wilson had made flawed and incomplete statements. And now we find out that neither George Bush nor Andrew Card have issued his chief of staff guy, have issued a policy with regard to whether or not the members of the administration should comply with the prosecutors or with the grand jury. So they may be being told by Bush, essentially, that they have the right to invoke their Fifth Amendment right. In other words, don't go along with the investigation. See where this one leads, my friends. We will see where this one leads. This is the Tom Hartman radio program, Truth in Broadcasting. Thanks for being with us these 3 hours. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. Thanks to Shelby and RadioPower.org for beaming us around the planet on the web. Thanks to the folks at Sirius for carrying us. Thanks to the folks at the radio station you're listening to us on for carrying the program. And thank you for showing up and listening. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same place. We'll see you then.
been listening to the Tom Hartman Program, check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Isn't it? So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
He loves it.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Jobs lost, 2.4 million. Federal deficit, $455 billion. War in Iraq, 9,000 human lives. Friends left at the United Nations, free. America's future, bankrupt.
The time is now. Take our country back.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.